Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 83. And you know, sometimes I think I'm wasted recording this podcast. With a talent like mine, I might have been a great slow bowler. I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
I'm Glenn.
How are you guys doing?
Think this is a waste of time.
I kid.
In a couple weeks, you're going to go on holiday.
Yeah, I'll be on
we'll
holiday.
Just be the two of us.
Just be the two podcasters.
We'll show you how good this show can really
That's
be.
That's right. We don't have the albatross this week.
Seems to me that an albatross is only bad luck till you kill it.
Until you kill it?
Well, isn't that what the phrase was? The line
after
phrase?
After you kill it. If you kill it, it's bad luck.
Yeah, that's what I said.
No, you said until you kill it.
Until.
Which would mean we would be inclined to kill you to get rid of the bad luck.
What was the... Was it Tale of the Ancient Mariner? Yeah. Is that what where the guy had to wear the albatross around his neck? Kills the albatross, has to wear it around his neck. The crew... See, this is an omen bad sign.
One of the Phils would know. I don't.
Make him wear it around his neck. And then everybody else ends up dying. He ends up by himself on the ship. He's the only one to survive. He can't drink. I think that's where the phrase, water, water everywhere, not a drop to drink. That particular verse comes from, I think it's Tale of the Ancient Mariner. Might be the Old Man of the Sea. I can't remember which one it is. Anyway, I don't remember how it concludes. I read it like in high school English class, but he ends up being the last one on the boat. I mean, they put the albatross around his neck to curse him, hopefully, you know, get some of that bad luck all on him, and he ends up being the one that survives.
Because they killed it.
No, he killed it.
Oh, he killed it.
Yeah, they were
so they put it around.
You can't kill an albatross. That's bad luck for everybody. So what they decide to do is they hang it around his neck, force him to wear it, so hoping all the bad luck will go to him. Well, then bad luck ends up befalling all of them. They end up dying. I don't know if they starved or what they did. It's been a long time. Maybe I should look that up and read that again. I remember it being pretty interesting. Anyway, so...
You mean the ghost spaceship didn't take them into the alternate dimension?
No. But that would have been even cooler.
Yar. Pirates.
Keith, what'd you do this week?
Actually, I had a pretty low-key weekend. Didn't do much. Paid off my tux.
Why still didn't do that?
Got some shoes.
For the tux?
Yes, I got my chucks for the tux. I'm going with blue.
We're wearing chucks?
Yeah, with the tux.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I thought we'd been over this.
Nope.
This is what you get for missing staff meetings, Glenn.
I better double check with Blake to make sure he's
aware. So I didn't need to rent those shoes with the tux.
You rented shoes with it?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. You can wear those. That's fine.
Oh, we're chucks. We're wearing chucks.
Yeah, let me think about this. I can wear uncomfortable rental shoes, or I can go buy a pair of chucks.
Hell, if I knew I could wear chucks, I wear chucks.
I wonder if you could go back and change your rental to chucks.
That's what I'm going to... Oh, you can rent chucks?
From
get out of here.
No, they have chucks to rent from Men's Warehouse.
Oh, did you do that?
No, I went and bought some.
I'm going to go buy some, because I like chucks. I actually have a pair of red ones, but they're kind of worn. So
I remember your red ones. Now that you said that,
what color? I used to have.
Blue? I got blue.
Chargers blue.
Yeah, I got the blue to match.
To have
do you want everybody to match?
You guys are wearing silver, so I don't think blue would be appropriate.
That's true.
I think black would be the
We're
best
wearing
for you.
Silver
guys.
Tuxes.
Your vest is
the vest is
the
silver.
Vest is silver.
Not the tux.
We could all go with the different color shoes.
I'd be fine with that too.
For real?
Honestly,
because I'd love to do red ones.
Oh, let me double check with Sarah.
Okay.
Yeah, we better before we alter apparel, we better check with the boss.
I didn't know we were in checks. That's awesome.
I'm sorry. I thought you
know. No, and I was never informed. I rented shoes. I mean, the guy just fitted me for shoes. I went and got a fitting, and
I bet you could tell him to take off the shoes.
That's what I'm
going to
do. I haven't paid for the thing yet, so I put my deposit down.
But we went and did that, and back at 4th of July, my flip flops blew out. I finally got new flip-flops.
I blew out my flip-flop. Stepped on a pop-top.
That's not how I blew it out.
Cut my heel, had to cruise on back home.
And that's about it. We really didn't do much else. It was a very nice, relaxing weekend. Glenn, what'd you do?
Oh, what did I do? Nothing, really. We were the kind of the same way. We did a little shopping yesterday. We took the kids to lunch. We ate at Taco Fio, our favorite fast food Mexican restaurant.
I saw you check in there.
Yeah. That's about it. I mean, it was kind of a low-key weekend. We did some cleaned the house a little bit. Not much. We're getting ready for a big change at work on Monday, so Keith and I have been a little stressed this week. But
no demolition derby.
This week, but I
no
let
demolition
it go on
derby, derby. But Monday will be an adventure. Anyway, that's all I did. Sean, you didn't do anything this week, did you?
Nah, I did nothing.
Nothing. Where'd you go this week? He went somewhere.
I went on holiday.
How was your holiday?
It was good. Well,
what'd you do?
We went to Colorado.
There you go.
And we drove, which is about, well, if you follow Google's instructions, it's about 9 hours and 25 minutes to Estes Park, which is just north of Denver. We did it in about 12, but that was for various other reasons. I don't sleep before trips. I really shouldn't do this, but I'm just keyed up. I can't get my brain to shut down, yeah. I don't usually bother. And we didn't finish
you
the
even
podcast.
Got, you even got late. A chance to lay down and try to take a nap before you left.
Yeah, for all of about half hour.
And hour.
I reset the alarm when it went off half hour in because I thought, I need to get a half hour sleep. And that didn't happen. But I shouldn't do that because I get very mentally frazzled. And on top of leaving my wallet behind, which I didn't realize at the time, and I thought it had been stolen on the trip, the first driving shift was mine. Everybody's passed out in the car. And this is my one rule. Road trips start with a good mixtape. As long as I've got music in the car, I am good to go.
Is that you?
That was me.
Okay.
So I've got my tunes on, and it's Western Kansas, and it's pitch black, and I'm just driving, you know, and it's awesome. No scenery out the window.
There's no scenery. It's all flat.
Dark,
flat, and straight.
And I'm just happy as a clam because I'm in the car and I got my tunes on. And I'm looking at the mileage and I'm looking at the gas gauge and I think everything's cool. And I start kind of doing some mental calculations and realize, wow, I probably should have stopped for gas about 30 miles back and didn't. That's okay. We'll hit the next one. Oh, that's $3.99. I'm not paying that. I drove past it. So we get to the point where it's like, I got to stop for gas.
For those who don't know, driving in Western Kansas is like driving in the desert.
It might as well be.
There are no towns out there for miles
and miles.
When
you see that last chance gas station sign, you
really
stop.
It really is, because you're going to have another probably 3.5 hours before you get to the next gas station, especially between Colorado and, or between Goodland and, or not Goodland. Yeah, it's Goodland, right?
Goodland and Lyman.
Yeah, Lyman.
Yeah,
that's a stretch.
There's nothing out there. This was before that.
I'm glad we're going the other direction.
So we get out there, and Mel has woken up at that point, and the kids have woken up at that point. Now they're all like, what do you mean we're almost out of gas? And it's like, I'm on top of it. Don't worry about it. There's Greenleaf. We'll stop in Greenleaf and get gas. Greenleaf, 2 miles. See? And she's clicked over the little thing on her car that indicates how much, and it's counting down 10 miles until your tank is empty.
At least she's got that.
Yeah. So we pull off the road to Greenleaf, and there ain't no town there. There's nothing. It's like one of those, you have to take this road to get somewhere to get to Greenleaf. I mean, there's no town called Greenleaf. And we're driving. Didn't that say 2 miles? Yeah, it said 2 miles. We've gone like five. And the thing's counting down. 7 miles to your tank is empty. And it's like, where is Greenleaf? Oh, my God. Somebody has stolen this poor town, and it's disappeared, and nobody said anything on the news about it. So,
well, they did. It was just it's been not our news. It would have been the Wichita news.
We wind up in Hoxley. Hoxie, H-O-X-I-E, which was another, I don't know, 15 miles down the road. There's nothing.
Yeah.
It's cornfields and dirt. I mean, there was nothing out there.
I lived out there. Well, in the south part of the state, southwest part of the state.
You know what I'm talking about.
It's the same
down there. When that thing is the blinking lights going on and the countdown's going, it's like, it was getting a little, I was like, man, this is going to be a really nasty way to start this trip. I mean, we run out of gas before we get. So we literally coasted into Hoxley.
Was there something open in Hoxley?
Yeah, there was.
Because that's the other thing you run into.
Oh,
you'll get
yeah,
out there,
there's
and
no
you say,
24
well, there's a town here in 15 minutes. So we'll drive to that town. Then you'll get off at the exit because it's I-70. It's a
main
four
street
lane
of
highway.
America.
Yeah, it's a four-lane highway. You'll get off the exit, this little rinky-dink town, and there's nothing open.
Well, that was by that point, the sun had come up. I'd put enough miles that we were like, all right, you know. And everybody was up, but we coasted to the gas station and filled up with gas. And then Mel took over the next shift, because apparently she didn't trust me.
Well, you almost got him stranded in West Kansas.
So we get all the way to somewhere in Colorado. I don't know, past Lyman, but before Denver.
Can I ask before you go on?
Yeah,
because you started this endeavor at 3 o'clock in the morning, right?
We did.
Why did you leave at 3 o'clock in the morning? Just because you don't sleep the night before?
That's part of it. Part of it is also the fact that I wanted... when you have a 10-hour drive to the mountains, the kids had never seen them. I didn't want to start at 8 in the morning and then ride into town when it was dark and they couldn't see anything. Yeah. I wanted them to be able to see the mountains.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a big deal for your first time. Mm. And it was also a matter of, if we start earlier in the morning, if we start like at 3 in the morning, we can drive up and we'll get in. It put us in about 2, and we figured this will be a nice leisurely pace that we can get in. We can grab some lunch. We'll miss the traffic in Denver.
It makes it a travel day. Yeah.
You know, a relaxing travel day. It's not as pressure to get in there. Mm-hmm. And knowing that this is also going to be one of the days that, you know, we have to do stuff. You know, so you don't want to go and sightsee after you've been in the car for 10 hours.
Yeah.
But this way, you kind of break it up just a little bit and you're there. And you miss, I mean, let's be honest, Western Kansas is not all that much to look at.
Exciting,
so if you blow through it at, you know, between 3 and 6 in the morning when there's nothing going on, it's like, if they're asleep when it's passing by the window, it's not a big deal.
Right.
I'm sure the residents of Western Kansas would not agree with me, but...
No, they pretty much agree.
That's what the guys are like, hey, you should have stopped at our town. We've got the world's largest concrete gopher.
Prairie dog.
Prairie dog.
Been there, too.
You know, that's one of those things. Because I'm a big believer in... I never stopped at stuff. My grandfather was very rigid about schedules. The first pee break is going to happen at the 3-hour mark of this trip. And you're not stopping until that. And I was like, screw that, man. I'm going to stop when I want to stop. Yeah, if I want to stretch my legs, I'm stopping.
That's what I do.
If I need gas, I'm stopping. If I need to go to the bathroom, I'm stopping. I don't coordinate any of that. Because I want to go. And I told myself, when I see these signs, I've driven past these signs back and forth to Colorado my whole life. And I finally decided, I'm going to stop. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how many times I passed by the giant sunflower. Mm-hmm. And one of those times, I finally said, I'm going to stop and see that. The prairie dog, though, world's largest prairie dog. And I thought about it. And
concrete
prairie dog. I Googled it. Oh, it doesn't say that on the sign. And I Googled it, and I found out that it's a concrete prairie dog. Yeah. And I was like, man, I'd have been pissed if I drove 20 miles out of the way to go see this thing. It was concrete.
It is a concrete prairie dog.
I've also...
I know that?
Because you've been
I stopped. You know why I stopped? Because I saw world's largest prairie dog. Cool.
I was in the town with the world's largest hand dug well.
That's Greenberg.
Yeah, but that was covering the tornado.
when the well was covered up because of the tornado.
It's a good thing it wasn't Greenleaf because it ain't there anymore.
See, we'd stopped there several times because I went liberal. We'd drive to Hutchison, which is where my grandparents lived, and that was on that route.
So
we also stopped at the Dalton Gang Hideout in Meade, Kansas. So if you ever head down that way, be sure to check that out. There's a tunnel between the barn.
That's the one that's actually... It's Dalton. Oh, wait, that's different. Who's the guy that was the grave that you went to and they weren't sure if it was real grave?
That was Billy Kidd.
That's Billy Kidd. Different. Okay, never mind.
Well, that grave was Billy Kidd's grave. It was there was the dispute with the other one in town. But the Dalton Gang Hideout, it's really cool because there's a barn, and that's where like the museum is. And then you could walk through the tunnel to the house. They had dug a tunnel. That's how they escaped. So when the sheriff would come, you know, banging on the door, and they'd have the posse outside, and the Daltons were hiding out inside. Well, they just take this tunnel out to the barn, get on the horses and ride. So it was pretty cool.
Honestly, I've never... The Daltons don't ring a bell for me.
You know, the Dalton Gang, it wasn't real. I mean, they were a Kansas outlaw, but they weren't real.
What's coming up in my mind is the Apple Dumpling Gang.
The Apple Dumpling
Gang. Bonus points for you, Keith.
So anyway, I didn't interrupt.
No, it's okay. So we get to, I don't know, somewhere in Colorado, and I realize I don't have my wallet. And I'm panicking because I think I left it in Hoxley, which is, you know, 4 hours the wrong direction. And what do? Do we stop? Do we cancel the trip? Do we keep going and hope? And, you know, well, it turns out I'd left it at home, which we didn't find out until 3 days in. But
yeah, it was Tuesday?
Yeah.
So you're thinking your wallet's been stolen for like 3 days.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it definitely...
Technically, it was only two. It just feels longer
because like 3 weeks.
Because pedantic. technically,
it was Monday and Tuesday. He found out Tuesday,
but
he was conscious for most.
It was
of
two really
night.
Long
it
was, days.
Yes, it would be.
It was Wednesday before I found out, wasn't it?
I thought it was Tuesday because I thought it was the same day you found
Does
your disc.
Does it matter?
Well, it doesn't matter. So it definitely put a pallor on the whole. Oh my God! What do you mean? And of course the. what's running through my head when I think of this? Not the, oh my God, I've got to replace my ID and my credit cards and my... What's running through my head is Johnny Carson going, you're away from home and your wallet's stolen. What do you do? Doing the American Express spoof. That's what's running through my head. So, but we got to Estes Park, which was very pretty and very nice. And I did not know the Stanley Hotel is in Estes Park, which where Stephen King stayed and apparently inspired The Shining.
Oh, yeah.
And Ghost Hunters went and did a episode there.
And it supposedly is a haunted hotel.
Yeah.
I also didn't know Stanley, the guy, Stanley, is a very interesting guy. We didn't get to do the tour because we were running short on time and money. Well, you know, you don't have your wallet. Is it? But he was sent out there. He was kind of like Doc Holliday in Tombstone. They said, you need to get to a drier climate. You're going to die. He had tuberculosis or emphysema or something. So they sent him out. So he moves to Colorado and lived for another, like, 40 years after he got there. Because it just, the Stanley steamer, same guy.
Oh.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Call me down.
So he built the hotel. And he's got a ton of patents. The guy was an inventor like mad. Huh. I mean, he was like Tesla. Well, he just kept churning out stuff.
In Colorado, what else are you going to do? It's like being in Western Kansas.
Prettier.
It is prettier, but there's still not much else to do.
So then we left and went up through the Rocky Mountain National Park on the Trail Ridge Road, which is the longest continuous paved road in America, and it goes up like to 12,000 feet, and took a lot of pretty pictures and got sunburned, and then went to Frisco, which is in Summit County.
Because you were closer to the
sun. Yeah, well, you are. You're a lot closer. And it was one of those things.
A mile higher.
We stop at one of the pullouts, and Bell's like, you kids stay in the car. We're going to hike over to this rock and take a couple pictures. Yeah. It was like a half mile to the rock. So it's a full mile round trip at 12,000 feet. And she's just like, oh, we're going to do this, and it's going to be so cool. And she looks behind me, and I'm going, are you okay, honey?
Yes.
Are you coming?
Yes.
You all right?
Yes.
Meanwhile, old guys with walkers are passing me. And I realize maybe it's time to go on the diet. They're elbowing me out of the way. Don't step on the tundra. And they kept going. But, you know, so we had a lot of fun. And then we got to Frisco, which has kind of always been my home away from home. I love the town there. And we played some disc golf in both Estes Park at the YMCA of the Rockies and Frisco, which is very, very, very pretty.
I saw three different courses. Didn't you do three?
Just two.
Just two?
We played YMCA twice.
Okay.
I didn't put all the pictures in one. And all the pictures are available on Facebook if you want to be my friend. And then...
That's not like a desperate plea rather than a go look at my pictures.
Go look at my pictures if you're interested.
If you want to be my friend.
You
know. Please be my friend.
And then we drove...
Please.
We drove back and... finally got access to some money through a different account that I had that they got access to. So I took everybody out, and we had bubblegum shrimp in Breckenridge for our nice dinner. And I spent way too much of bubblegum. And then we stopped at Casa Bonita in Denver on the way home.
Oh,
and the
kids, God, I love Casa Bonita.
The kids were like, really? You dragged us here for this? And I'm like, it's fun. It's crazy. They hadn't seen the South Park episode, so it was pretty much lost on them. But it's like, you're paying for the atmosphere. They don't have quesadillas. But you can get... Jesse ate...
There are cliff divers.
Jesse ate fried chicken. I mean, you know... You're in a Mexican restaurant. No, they don't have quesadillas. I'll get the fried chicken. But it's Casa Bonita. They've got cliff divers and Black Bart's Cave, and it's... Yeah,
for those who don't know, explain this. I've never been to Colorado.
You've never been to Casa Bonita?
I've never heard of Casa Bonita.
Have you seen the South Park episode?
I haven't seen the South Park episode.
Wow.
Casa Bonita is the world's largest restaurant.
Yeah. Is it the world's largest?
It's the world's largest restaurant.
See, I didn't know that. I mean, it has to be. It's got cliff divers.
I found four new levels to this place that I didn't know existed, and I've been there twice. We actually got lost in the restaurant because the kids had already gone ahead, and we turned a corner, and then we're like, they've got a mine shaft room.
Yeah.
Like a whole room decorated like a mine shaft.
Oh, that's cool.
With booths and stuff. So we walked through that, and then we walked into this ballroom. Like, it has nothing to do with the rest of the restaurant. It's not Mexican-themed. It's not mine-themed. It's just a ballroom with gold-gilded chandeliers and a stage.
They probably rent it out for, like, weddings and things like that.
Yeah. And it's like, okay. So then we went, and there was a balcony. But inside the restaurant...
Casa Bonita is a Mexican restaurant.
It's a Mexican restaurant.
And the food, honestly, is me. It's okay.
It's not the best food in the world. I will. Don't think you do.
You don't go for the food. You go for the atmosphere.
Okay.
But you wind through a line to get in this place. I mean, it's like this huge line, and
it's like in a strip mall.
Yeah.
It's like a strip mall with a pink tower, and you look at this, and you're going,
and you're like,
"This is Casa
Bonita. This is the largest.
This is what you're talking about." And you walk in this thing, and it's like the TARDIS. It's bigger.
It is. It really is. It's amazing. And you get to walk by a window, and one of the windows, I don't know if it's still true, one of the windows you can actually look into the kitchen and see them making the tortillas.
Yeah,
oh, that's right? Cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, that was incredible. And then you wind through, and you finally get to see
they take
having
your food.
Never been to Colorado, I'd never heard of this.
And so they walk you out, and you go into this
expansive opening.
It's like just, Disney World. It's just like all of a sudden you're like, where did all this come from? There's palm trees and mariachi bands and a waterfall. A three-story
waterfall
inside the restaurant that this guy comes out and climbs up the cliff and then jumps off into the pool of water. Every half hour, they got somebody jumping off this cliff.
Yeah.
They do puppet shows.
I'll be that guy.
They do, they've got Black Bart's Cave, which is like this, it's a play area, but you kind of go into it and you're like, Black Bart buried his treasure in the cave and it's got like skulls and glowing things on the walls. I mean, it's aimed at kids, but...
Yeah.
And then there's an arcade. It's like showbiz. They've got skee ball and, you know,
wow. All stuff.
If you want more food,
photos.
If you want more food, if you want your waitress to come to your table, they have these little flags. You raise the little flag at your table, and it goes up there. And if it's up, they'll come over there and help you.
So I found out through Casa Bonita through the South Park episode.
Okay.
I saw the South Park episode, and I laughed, and I thought, wow, this is really weird. And then I found out it was a real restaurant that they did this. Apparently, Matt and Trey are really big Casa Bonita fans.
I haven't been there
so
25
years,
probably.
It was a quest. We've got to go to Casa Bonita. And I've been three times now, and I don't care. I laugh with this stupid grin on my face. Because it's just dumb fun.
They had one in... Well, I think they still have one in Tulsa.
In Tulsa, there's one.
It's
I don't think
as
it's...
nice. It's not as big, but...
Never been to Oklahoma either, so I don't know.
So we stopped
God,
there.
My God, you're a sheltered man.
How do you live in Kansas? Not
where have
made
you
it to
been
Oklahoma
outside of Kansas besides Missouri? You've been in New York.
I've been in New York.
You flew to New York. You didn't drive there.
No, I didn't drive there. Pennsylvania, Ohio, Maryland, Virginia.
I guess you went and saw your sister that one time, so you went to a lot of the states there.
Well, and I went to New York and D.C. before my sister ever lived there. So
East Coast.
I've been East Coast. I've been to Florida for my sister's wedding.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. If it wasn't for your sister, you wouldn't have any culture.
Yeah.
I swear.
I'm going to New Orleans next month.
Is that where you're taking your...
Yeah, that's where our port is.
You guys are cruising.
Yes.
There's a bubblegum shrimp in New Orleans.
I'll have to try to stop.
Sean needs another glass.
I need another glass.
Sorry, Sean. Go ahead.
So then we came home. We stopped in Goodland and took wonderful photos of the giant Van Gogh sunflower that's back up on display after being restored.
Way to bring it back around to Doctor Who.
I was. And then I feel bad because I grabbed her name and
you
I apparently
Van
have
Gogh.
Lost it.
Van
Gogh.
Van Gogh.
I apparently have lost it. We honestly got to the point where I had robbed my TARDIS bank for loose change. Just to be on the safe side. Because I've been on enough trips. My mom was a very big believer in, we're going on this trip, hell or high water. We're going. Because you guys need to have this experience. I don't know how I'm going to pay for it, but we're going to go. And there were many, many times where we were scrounging around, counting up loose change in the seats on the way back from wherever we'd gone. Because, oh, we forgot there's a toll road, or, you know, gas money, or can we eat at McDonald's tonight or not? You know, that kind of stuff. So we're on the way back, and we stopped and pumped our last $10 from the TARDIS bank into the car and still didn't have enough gas. And there was a Good Samaritan at the quick shop in Salina that chipped in an extra 10 to make sure that we'd get
home.
And I
was
going to mention her
nice.
On the podcast, and I don't have her name, so I'll have to make sure that when I reimburse her, because I'm sending her a check, that, you know, well, I mean, I lost my wallet. What was I going to do?
Right. Yeah.
You know, and she was like, oh, do you need money? I'm like, no. I was actually a little offended because I came in and I gave her the puppy dog eyes. I'm like, you know, I feel really bad about this, but we're on our way back from Colorado, and I lost my wallet, and, you know, and she's like, well, do you need money? And it was like, no, I'm not one of those people. I just have $10 in change. Can I get it? And she was like, oh, yeah. Is $10 going to be enough? Oh, yeah, it'll be fine. So we put $10 in the car and then had to go back. And was like, it's not enough according to the little numbers on the dial. Christine, I don't remember her last name, but Christine in Salina was a saint, and she got us home. So thank you, Christine, and I will send you money. So
cool.
That was my week. Enough of that.
Wow.
That was quite a week.
All right. Well, let's move on to the stuff that we don't want to have to talk about, but we need to.
Other couple of things have happened this week.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Very sad things.
Yeah, way to bring me down.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's why I texted you, though, because I didn't know if you'd heard or not. So I didn't want you to be surprised or something by it. So,
Glenn, why don't you take this?
Well, the lovely Marriott Tam passed away this week. If you don't know who she is, well, you shouldn't be listening to this podcast. But she played Ramada 1 in the is it season 16 Key of Time season, also known as the Key of Time season. She was the first Ramana and joined Baker for the first story, which was the one on the snowy planet.
Ribos Operation.
Thank you.
Ribos
Operation. And then, of course, stuck around until Armageddon Factor, which is the one you were trying to roll off your tongue there. So, yeah, lovely woman. She lost her battle with cancer. And it's one of those things where we just got off of, what was it, 2 weeks ago, we got the news that Carolyn John had passed away.
Yeah.
And from cancer, and it was just, it's been a year ago since we lost Sarah Jane or Elizabeth Sladen. Sorry, I'm a little worked up here. No, to cancer. So it's just, it's really odd just to hear everybody, we're losing all everybody to this just dreadful disease. And
it almost makes me wonder, there was an odd Hollywood legend, kind of story. And I don't remember now which movie it was, but somebody started connecting the dots, and it's this old John Wayne Western. I want to say it was The Searchers. It was one of the big ones. But they realized that John Wayne, the two co-stars, the female lead, the director, the unit producer, the caterer, I mean, like, everybody on this film wound up getting cancer and died. And it wasn't until years and years and years and years and years later that they realized apparently it was a government nuclear test site that they went out and filmed on, and apparently it was buried in the records and nobody had said anything about it. And so a lot of people think that that's, you know, the United States government killed John Wayne because you know, they gave him this radiation. But that story popped into my head when I got the text from you, and it made me kind of wonder if there isn't something at, you know, the BBC Center that maybe they had lead-lined paint in the walls or something on the Doctor Who sets.
I think there was asbestos. I mean, I think it's coincidental, though, because a lot of, I mean, how many actors and actresses, were on Doctor Who that don't have cancer?
And we don't know what kind of cancer were
there. We didn't know Elizabeth Sladen had cancer.
And we don't know what kind of cancer they suffered from.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be any kind.
I certainly think it's coincidental, but I think it's just...
It's still tragic. I mean,
it's tragic. Yeah, it's tragic that there's been these deaths.
Well,
but
it's tragic any time that anybody dies from cancer.
Yeah,
I mean, my grandfather died from cancer, and it's one of those things that's like... I get really worked up about it because it's like, we should have a cure for this thing right now.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's frustrating.
Well, there's some people, we're going to conspiracy theory, but there's some people that believe that there is a cancer out there, or there is a cure for cancer out there, but the problem is the...
Pharmaceutical companies won't
release it because it's there's more of a business in selling drugs that don't cure cancer, but you know, help you through it. You know,
I believe
you cure cancer, then that dries up a lot of the drug supply. So I don't know.
I believe the pharmaceutical companies are the root of all evil, quite honestly. But you know, that's another story for another podcast.
Them insurance companies. Anyway, so
it's so sad that we only got that one season with her, and she didn't even do any big finish, right?
Yes.
She did?
She did.
Oh, good. When I heard the news, I was like, I really hope she did big finish.
She was set to do something with Tom, too, wasn't she?
I believe so. I believe she was set to do something on one of the new seasons, but she did. There's something, I think Dr. Phil actually sent us some feedback on one that she did, one of the Gallifreys that she did, where she played Ramana opposite Ramana 2.
Ooh.
Well, that
and they were both in it, and I don't remember exactly how they wind up crossing their own time streams, but it's the two Ramanas.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the details of that story now, but I remember at the time hearing that and thinking, oh, wow, that sounds really cool. I want to say she did a couple of them, but I could be wrong.
I was hoping there was a section that listed the actors and actresses in this book, but I don't see it.
We'll have Keith. Very quickly Google that and see what we can find out now.
Wikipedia.
She was supposed to appear at Galley last year, and I remember kind of a last minute thing where she had something come up and couldn't make it. And
maybe she was too sick.
I wonder if that's not it now. And I remember reading the post on Galley that she had said that she hoped that she'd be there this year or this coming year.
Yeah. It looks like this is her, isn't it? Yeah, it looks like maybe she did some Companion Chronicles.
Oh.
If that's her. It looks like her. There's a picture here, but I'm not seeing. Let's see.
Tam recorded seven new Doctor Who audio adventures for Big Finish with Tom Baker shortly before her death.
Yeah.
Oh, so
she did do something. You remember when they announced last year that Tom was finally on board? I thought they said that he was going to do some with...
Louise Jameson,
and then was going to do something with Mary Tam.
So Tam
returned as Pandora in the second series of the Gallifrey audio plays. Her first such appearance was in Gallifrey Lies in 2005. She also appeared as herself in a special feature in the 2007 box set release of Key to Time. In August, she made brief 1 week appearance in Orlando as EastEnders. That doesn't matter.
Yeah, so here she is. Oh, yeah. This says, Fourth Doctor Companion Romana 1, Mary Tam faced the Stealers of Safe. So that must be a Companion Chronicle that she did as well. So, yeah,
There's more Romana or Mary Tam for us to explore.
And we've just seen her recently, and, I mean, she didn't look sick. You've commented on this before. I mean, she's a very strikingly beautiful woman.
Oh, she's gorgeous. She's one of my... How do I politely say this? She's one of my... I think she's one of the most attractive companions of all of the Doctor's companions. I've always been just awestruck by her beauty. I think she's gorgeous.
And she... I mean, seeing her just recently in whatever interview it was that we watched... I don't remember now which...
It
might have even been... Of course, who knows when those were recorded. But, I mean, it's still fairly recent. And she still looked good. I mean, she didn't look like she was... How old was she? 61, I want to say?
Yes, she was born in 50.
Yeah.
So
she's probably coming up on 62.
She's barely less than a year younger than my mom. So that's kind of a whoa.
Yeah. Wow.
It's just
cancer knows no age.
It's just tragic to lose these people. So,
I'll tell you, what
so
I am grateful for is, Keith, that you were able to, we actually did this entire series, that you were able to get to see all of the Key of Time.
And none of her stories is lost. And I look forward to... I liked her, Romana. I liked the growth she had during the Key to Time. And I look forward to seeing more of that in the Big Finish adventures when we get around
hearing
to...
Hearing
more of that when we get around to those that she recorded.
I think that's terrific.
I'll draw pictures for you so that you can see the Big Finish audios.
Maybe they'll do flash animations.
They'll be stick figures.
Our thoughts and prayers and meditations, of course, go out to her family and friends and those closest to her that are suffering now because from the loss. So,
we also had another loss in the Whoniverse this week. Jeffrey Hughes, who in 1986, he played Mr. Popplewick in The Ultimate Foe, which was the last story of the trial of a Time Lord. He passed away at the age of 86. Or 68, I'm sorry. 68.
Did it say from what?
I'm looking now. It doesn't.
Not cancer.
He had previously beaten prostate cancer.
Huh?
And found it had returned.
Oh. That's too bad.
So.
And that's actually, ironically enough, that's another seasonal story arc that was sold on its season. And that one you haven't seen yet.
We've been holding off on...
His face looks familiar to me.
Trial of Time Lord.
I don't know why, but I mean, I don't recognize anything he's done. Although he did supplied the voice of Paul McCartney in Yellow Submarine.
Mm.
Oh wow,
the cartoon.
Yeah, because none of them actually did their voice. Well, they did that one. There's a clip of them at the end. Them, and of course the songs are them. But.
I feel bad now. I own a movie this guy's in.
Yeah,
and he's gone.
There you go. I felt bad even though I didn't know anything.
Well,
way to rub that in, Glenn.
So, but, you know, we certainly our thoughts, prayers, and meditations also go out to Jeffrey Hughes' family. All right, should we move on to some happier things?
Something
guys?
Happy, something leading up to, so, something in theory, so New Who. BBC America is going to air 4 new special documentaries about Doctor Who, a part of their Supernatural Saturday-themed evenings. Starting August 4th, The Science of Doctor Who. After that will be The Women of Doctor Who, The Timey-Wimey of Doctor Who, and The Destinations.
Wait, there's one called The Timey-Wimey of Doctor Who? That's awesome. That's awesome.
And The Destinations of Doctor Who. So, a lot of theory is that that last one will air pairing with the new episode on August 25th.
It certainly does look like we're starting to zero in on the 25th.
Well, before that, I think we'll know for sure on August 2nd because the UK trailer for the new series is being released on August 2nd.
Around 8 p.m. on BBC One for those in the UK.
That is the day that we'll know when Doctor Who is returning. Although, the last time Doctor Who returned with a trailer, BBC America announced when it was going to be on before the BBC did. So,
well, and this trailer forms a part of a series of promotions for shows that form the latest original British drama campaign that will run throughout London Olympics coverage.
Oh, so
over the coming 17 days.
Will it not be its
days.
Own? Trailer?
Will,
oh, so they'll just each of the
each
dramas
shows
will, okay,
will have their own trailer.
Because you know sometimes
this.
They do those at the beginning
the clips,
of the year where it's like all of the dramas.
Well, I mean, let's not forget we've had a season 7 trailer.
Yes,
well,
we have. We have had one.
It just came out and said coming this fall.
We
could still be in for a
and truthfully, there wasn't a lot shot by then, so we didn't, there was no Jenna Louise Jameson.
Yes,
and
it was all
it
up
was,
to...
There were some of the Dalek episode, which will start, we'll start
it
the
was
season.
Mostly the Western.
There was mostly the Western, and I think there was one other... There were clips from one other episode, I think I saw that...
It was the Weasley episode.
Yeah, yeah, with Mr. Weasley. What's his name?
Arthur.
The actor's name.
Oh,
we saw that
actor.
Shot of Filch, too, which was a different episode, too, right?
That was the same one.
Oh, okay.
Filch and Weasley on the same episode.
So there were 3 episodes for that. So
which unfortunately makes Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire the ultimate Doctor Who tie-in film. Because there are now 1, 2, 3, 4.
Arthur's in that one?
5 actors that were in...
5. I've got 4. Filch? Oh, duh. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
let's hope Robert Pattinson never graces our scene on during Doctor Who.
He was all right in Harry Potter.
There was, okay, now there'll be a Filch, there'll be Arthur Weasley, there'll be Dumbledore, and Barty Crouch Sr. Who's the other one? Duh.
Barty Crouch Jr.
Yes, I know.
We'll act you may have heard of, we've talked about him a bit.
Occasionally.
Did a few things.
Well, since we're talking about Olympic coverage, let's talk about the Olympics opening ceremony.
Good segue, Keith. Good
Thank
segue.
You.
I totally thought you were going to go with the David Tennant into the other Beast of the News.
No.
We're going to talk about Olympic
his name away.
Fails.
Olympic... And from what I...
Can I play this early?
Play it early.
This is what we think of the Olympic coverage.
Wow. Okay. There was an entire section, as we reported before, that was going to include the theme song, and now we know a video montage.
The theme song to... we announced that it would be the James Bond theme.
Oh, yeah, that one, too.
Yeah, well, which was in there.
I couldn't remember, though.
It was in there.
Well, that was because of
part of the James Bond, which was very cool. Well, you haven't seen that yet?
That's really cool.
I heard Daniel Craig and Mr. Bean.
That was a win. That was a win.
Yes.
Yeah, those were both wins. But
And Kenneth Branagh.
But the Doctor Who theme and the Monty Python theme we announced were going to be part of that, the opening music of the opening ceremonies. As we saw later, there was actually going to be a montage of all 11 doctors in the opening ceremonies. Unfortunately, because I can't believe this is the excuse. Because people had to get home from the venue after the thing was over, and the Metro closes at a certain time. They were afraid that it was going to be 30 minutes too long, and the people wouldn't be able to get home at night if they went 30 minutes too long, and it was going to take the athletes a certain amount of time to parade into the stadium. They decided that they were going to have to cut something, and what got cut were the Monty Python montage that they were going to do and the Doctor Who montage. So sadly, the only thing we get Doctor Who related in this ultimate British opening ceremonies themed, really cool opening ceremonies that they do, the only Doctor Who we get is a TARDIS groan during the song Bohemian Rhapsody.
Which, apparently it was on screen. There was a screen that was showing that.
On the house.
Yeah. We just didn't see it with the cameras.
So NBC failed too.
No. Whoever shot it.
Yeah, because
it's the same.
I'm just chomping a bit to blame
it's the same as the BBC.
You saw the BBC's and it's the exact same
thing. It's the exact same thing. So maybe BBC failed.
NBC pays so much money for the Olympics every year. I'm sure that they're like the pool cam.
Oh, that could be.
Everybody gets their feed from them. So.
Yay! I'm going to blame NBC.
But that's all we got.
Major, major Olympics fail. So not only did the 10th Doctor not light the cauldron.
We've already retconned.
Not only did the 11th Doctor not get to be seen live during the run.
That would have been cool, too.
It's just a string of Doctor Who fails. Now all we get is the TARDIS groan.
Although, the fact that Danny Boyle wanted to include this and didn't get to just makes me more of a Danny Boyle fan.
He's the one to cut it.
I didn't think he did. No,
he's the one to cut it.
I saw that he was furious that it got cut from his show.
No, he's back.
I think
You're the director. You're the one deciding what gets cut.
Not if there are the powers that be.
The powers that be said, is
going,
cut this.
You've got to cut something because you've got to get people home on the trams.
I think the Queen could have said, Metro must stay open
an
hour later tonight.
There is that. They could have cut the show a half hour longer and nobody would have any issue.
Let's deal with the true issue here.
That's the bigger problem.
You're hosting the Olympic Games in a major metropolitan city. This isn't Goodland. This is London. And the Metro closes?
And this is
closes?
Your third time.
Yeah.
The Metro closes in London?
Yeah.
I mean,
the Metro closes, or the
really?
Metro.
Fail.
So,
if you're, well, here,
at no point in time did anybody go, you know what? For that 2 weeks, we probably ought to run the Metro 24/7. Or at least have extended hours.
Yeah.
So that people can get to
the
games.
That's the bigger fail.
And home. You didn't think about this ahead of time? Forget the fact that you cut Doctor Who. You didn't think about the fact that you've got X number of thousands of people in London?
You know what they could have done? They could have cut about half of that stupid 80s pop.
I didn't like that. Yeah.
It wasn't 80s. It was all a pop culture internet tribute thing. That was horrible. Did tribute to the digital age. I mean, it was cute and clever, but way too long. Oh, my gosh.
I honestly think Danny Boyle's vision of the entire ceremonies isn't complete because of that half hour.
Yeah, I would agree.
And I don't blame him for having to cut that half hour.
So will it show up in the director's cut?
I saw it.
There is no director's cut. They didn't even do it.
Yeah.
Right, but when they put it on DVD, it'll be in the director's cut, right?
They didn't perform it. That's the problem, isn't it?
Maybe they filmed a dress rehearsal and they can cleverly cut it in.
That would be awesome.
Can't Danny Boyle, as the director, say, everybody's going to come over to my house on Saturday and we're going to do this in the backyard and I'll get the high-def camera out and a couple of GoPros and we're going to put it on the on the DVD.
So disappointed.
So, yeah, big epic fail for the Olympics.
However, there is a win for Doctor Who. And
yes.
That win comes this week.
Did he win a gold?
U.S. win.
The U.S. win, yes.
Did we win
Doctor
a gold?
Who.
If the U.K. is going to fail.
The U.S. is going to pick up that mantle.
The U.S. is going to pick up the slack. Coming out this week, August 3rd, I believe you said,
that's
the
date on the issue.
Is?
So it's... Yeah.
One of our favorite doctors, the 11th Doctor, will grace the cover of Entertainment Weekly in the United States.
Yay!
What? And you've probably seen the pictures on Facebook.
Yep.
There's a picture of Matt Smith holding a tablet with the cover, which is pretty cool.
And,
but that's not on the cover.
No.
No.
He's actually holding
the cover. He's holding the cover of the magazine that, on the magazine that you're... My brain just imploded.
You probably could do that, yes.
That'd be cool.
Accompanying the cover inside is an article titled Inside the Cult of Doctor Who, How a British Sci-Fi Series Became a Global Geek Obsession.
I wonder if they touch on podcasts and how there's so many Doctor Who podcasts out there.
I don't know. Let me find out. We'll because I happen to have the digital copy of it.
If not, we'll have to write Entertainment Weekly and we can get in the letters section. Traveling the Vortex you says, you guys didn't touch on podcasts.
Yes.
Let's see. I don't. It's actually what we decided is 14 pages long.
Which is impressive for Entertainment Weekly.
So, I haven't had a chance to read it because literally we downloaded it minutes before the cast. So, but be sure to pick that up.
If you're wondering, is it one of those that's going to be worth it? Because like I went out and picked up the Entertainment Weekly that had Nathan Fillion on the cover. And thought, oh, wow, Nathan Fillion's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly. This is going to be so cool. And it was like a two-page article, and it really...
My mom got the Time Joss Whedon Avengers cover. Two-page article.
Yeah. I mean, it just so often...
It was a great article, but it wasn't worth it.
This is 14 pages of content.
Let me warn you, if you're looking for some insight into the seventh season of Doctor Who, there isn't much of that. In fact, the little blurb that they have on the season 7 preview... Is stuff we already know.
Well, I'm sure realistically everything in this 14 pages is stuff already know.
Yeah, that's probably
I don't
true.
Care. It's 14 it's pages in a major American
and it
publication.
Starts from the beginning.
So
that's what I think is the coolest. They don't focus on new Who.
I mean,
it's all of Who.
We joked earlier off mic that 14 pages is longer than the American version of Doctor Who magazine.
Yeah.
the Panini or whatever it was released that was... Right, I mean, that's an impressive chunk of magazine devoted to this. So definitely I encourage everybody to go out and show their support and buy Entertainment Weekly and let them know that, oh my God, this is our best-selling issue ever. Maybe we should put Doctor Who on the cover more often.
And I don't know how Entertainment Weekly typically divides up their magazine. I don't read it very often, but that seems like a large chunk
to me. Chunk.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Larger than most things would have.
There's also a cool article on the top 25 geek
cult shows.
Cult TV.
Although we disagree
with... We don't agree
with
some
we'll
of
disagree
a lot
with
of
the numbers, but...
Yeah, so...
I'm uploading the cover right now. I know it's already been on places, but...
Oh, to our site.
Yep.
Well, what's next while Glenn's doing that?
I think that's all of our news, isn't it?
That's... No, wait a minute.
You can't do two things at the same time,
can't.
Kid.
Not on the air bar. No, that is the last bit. Yeah, so we're ready to move on to...
Feedback. Back.
Oh, wait, somebody already did it. Somebody already has the cover on there.
Well, I put that on...
On Facebook.
On the Facebook.
On Facebook.
Nice job.
But it's not on our site. You can put it on our site.
On the site
side. Not easily. I'll do it later.
Our first bit of feedback comes from Mark.
Oh, and he pointed me. I don't have that one queued up. Thanks so much. Hang on, I got it.
Whichever one of you can get to it first.
Mark writes. I have to prepare myself for this is a challenge to do this.
Now this is the story. Sorry. Sorry, I was going to do Bust a Move. Now this is the story.
Now this is a story about all how my wife got flipped, turned upside down. So I'd like to take a minute. Just sit right there. I'll give you my feedback. It's a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh, it's Fresh Prince. I was thinking it was...
Ruin his joke. Sorry, guys. I've been watching a lot of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reruns.
Subject, did you?
Huh?
The subject.
Yeah, I didn't get all the way through it.
Quite possibly niche.
I just saw the references. First line and went, hey, that sounds like that song by Young MC.
This just in, Glenn's white. sorry, guys. I've been watching a lot of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reruns.
I also thought it said my wife got flipped, turned upside down. So it's probably a good thing I didn't read it, okay?
Yeah.
It's going to be one of those shows.
It's going to be one of those shows. Watching a lot of Fresh Prince reruns lately, I think I'm addicted to it again.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry, Mark.
Oh, Mark.
We would have an intervention, but I just don't think there's enough time.
Mark.
Wow.
That's an American show that Americans are embarrassed of.
There was a time where it was on Nick at Night, and I was ashamed it was on Nick at Night, but I still watched it.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I watched it on its first run.
Are you shocked that it was on Nick at Night or that he watched it?
That he watched it because the Nick at Night thing's been recent. It's been, like, within a year.
No, it's been longer than that. I was living at home still.
Oh.
So this was 5-6 years ago?
Really?
This, okay. Wings, Cosby Show, a lot of stuff that shouldn't be on Nick at Night.
Well, Nick at Night has been stuff that shouldn't be on Nick at Night for a long time, so...
Full House?
Yeah, they ran out of it.
I stayed up late because I had nothing else to do and watched all those.
Hey, I watched Full House.
So did I, because I watched it when it was new.
I can honestly say, quite proudly, I have never seen a full episode of Full House.
Well, then you cannot.
Yes,
that's like,
I can.
No, that's like
yes,
not voting and then complaining when they elect the guy that you don't want.
The 5 minutes here or there that I did catch was enough to convince me I don't need to watch this show.
No, come on.
Think of all the anguish
Danny
you could have saved.
Danny Tanner, Uncle Joey, Uncle
Think of
Jesse.
All the anguish you would have saved me if you'd showed me the last episode of
DJ.
Lost first.
Yeah, that's true.
See? Why suggest
myself? It wouldn't have made
sense.
No, it probably wouldn't have. I'd been really lost. I wonder
why
they call this
with
lost.
The end?
Mark, we promise we'll finish your email
later. So, anyway. Where was I? Wow, I've sent in some feedback with some strange, completely unrelated introductions. But that may have just been the strangest. It tops a shopping list, eh? Apparently, Mark is now Canadian.
It says EA.
Just thought I'd write in and thank you guys for starting to review Big Finish lately. I've been enjoying their audios for a while now, and I own almost all of them. I try not to think about how much it's costed me, but let's just say I could have probably bought a new car by now. Or maybe a Cardus. That's a year and bit long callback, so I'll apologize to new listeners. And I have to be honest.
Great callback!
When I read this, my brain seized up and I went, I know that from somewhere. And then I kept going, it's a bit long callback. And the mental filing cabinet literally flew open and my brain went, oh, yeah!
That's one of the things we haven't beat to death on this show.
But you know
That's
what?
That's why many won't remember
time.
It.
Time. It's okay. I'm bringing it back. and whilst we're on the subject, I'd recommend taking a look at the audios with Ian Chesterton in them. They're so awesome. That's all this week. That's just the short thing I wanted to say. So, yo, home to Bel Air from Mark McArmite III. Or III. However that's pronounced.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Up next.
I rehearsed that. I read the
So did I when I read it
I
the
read
first
the
time.
Email out to make sure I had the cadence down to go with the song. Because I didn't want to screw it up. And then you threw Bust a Move in there. Just... Damn it, Glenn!
Oh.
Okay, who's next?
All right.
Next up.
Odd Duck Phil. Question, comments, I'm Batman. Hey, Who Beacons?
Nope. Comment, question, comment.
Oh, that's right.
I'm Batman.
Comment, question,
comment. Because you can't say I'm Batman as a question, because it's not. It's
I'm Batman.
Do you guys see that video clip?
I'm Spartacus.
People saying I'm Batman? Of all the media... television movie references to I'm Batman. Yeah. It includes even Abed.
Wow.
It's great.
Well, I'd hope it includes Abed.
Several times. It even includes the actual Batman movies.
Yeah.
That's
cool.
Nolan.
Well, it should. I mean...
Well, the first one it said
Keaton is the one that...
Yeah.
That's where that started.
He does the I'm Batman.
What are you? I'm Batman. I mean, you gotta... That's where that came from. Okay.
Anyways, hey, Who Peekins, trying to hammer this out. Well, to get it under the wire. So, plunging right in. One, the dun-dun-dun rating scale. I think it needs something worse than silence. I know you've said that any who is good who, but given the testimonials you've given, at times you've given, I believe that is not always true. Some Doctor Who episodes / books / audio plays are so bad that if a newcomer experiences it, there's a real chance they won't come back for seconds. So I mentioned a few for a new bottom-of-the-barrel rating and submit a couple of candidates.
Well, one we heard earlier. And my new favorite...
Number two, tropical storms, exhibit A. And he includes a link, which we will include, which has this headline of Tropical Storm Debbie was a storm for the ages.
Phil, I think, is still feeling a little slighted that Chrissy sent a feedback in a couple of weeks back about, oh, I didn't think the last tropical storm that I was through was all that bad. So he's still pumping
up. He's defending himself.
Oh, it was crazy. There were flying cows, man. You should have seen this. It was really bad. I'm not disputing anything, and obviously, you know, yeah, tropical storms are bad, but I think it's funny that this is still a topic of conversation.
Exhibit B will be arriving shortly as I try to track down a couple of pictures of us driving through standing water and playing in the storm aftermath.
You're not supposed to drive through standing water, Phil.
Turn around, don't drown.
Important safety tip. Thank you, John. Don't you remember? Phil, you lived in Kansas, man. You were in Missouri, but I mean, it was
turn
close
around,
enough.
Don't drown.
You never heard that? You don't drive through standing water because you don't know how deep it could be.
Right.
I mean, it could be a chuck hole, especially in Topeka. It could be a chuck hole there, and you just go all the way in.
Three. Dark Knight Rises tangent. Had a ball. Need to see them all again. But right now, it's my current favorite.
Oh.
It may just be...
Sorry.
It may just be that it ends a trilogy and it ends well, or that the new car smell hasn't worn off. But what a ride Nolan took us on from start to finish.
It's that last part, Phil.
I agree that Nolan took us on a ride from start to finish, and it does end the trilogy well. I also agree that I think it's the new car smell. Wow. I think you're still on that high that you're just like, oh, wow, it was awesome.
Go back and watch them again. You'll
go back and watch them again.
Dark Knight's still the best.
Four. I'm sorry, there is no four. Oh, wait, let me start over. Four. Feedback jingle. I want a full episode, or full version for this episode. I want snapping, and I want their little scat finish. I want to be able to picture Sean doing jazz hands at the finish. It's not the jingle we want. It's the jingle we deserve. On the Dark Knight Rises, Phil. Now I feel bad we did such a lame feedback angle.
I'm so glad I didn't read this.
The jingle you deserve, huh?
All right, Sean, give us the jingle we deserve because you didn't do it at the beginning.
I didn't. I purposely didn't do it at the beginning because I did read this in advance, and I have to admit, I laughed for a good solid 15 minutes after I read it, and then I began to panic because it was like, how can I spruce this thing up any more than we've... I mean, I could come in like pre-recorded drum beat music or something.
Wait, listen, he doesn't want it spruced. He wants the full version, the snapping, he wants a little scat at the end, and he wants to be able to picture you doing jazz hands at the finish.
Well, here, take the picture now. we'll fake the ending.
We're not faking
anything.
I'll still do this at the end, but I want to make sure the photo looks good. So we're going to fake the photo now. This is a news thing. You guys should know how this works.
This is a news thing, and I'm going to videotape this.
Oh, God. How's my hair? Do I look all right?
All right, here we go.
The whole thing from start to top?
No, it's got to be the whole thing. You got to do it just like Phil requested.
Where are you going?
Consider this a wedding present.
Hi, Phil. I forgot how it starts. It's been so long. Oh, yeah. It's only got three words. You'd think I'd be able to figure this out. Feedback, feedback. We've got some feedback. That's right, it.
Phil,
turn the
just
camera
for
off.
You, we've got
because Phil likes to send in because Phil likes to send in video feedback. We're going to send some feedback video.
Oh, that's good stuff.
there's the jingle you deserve. Not the one you wanted, but the one you deserve.
That's good stuff. All right, well, let's get the dirty work out of the way this week, then. Our reviews.
The Horns of Nymon. When the TARDIS collides with the spaceship en route to the planet Skonos, the Doctor, Romana, and K-9 soon uncover the horrible truth about its cargo. The ship is carrying young sacrifices for a powerful horned creature called the Nymon. But why is the creature so desperate for the delivery? And what other dangers await the time travelers? All will be revealed at the center of the Labyrinth power complex on Skonos.
Are you booing my review? Or...
I think he's booing the episode. There is some enjoyable bits in this episode.
I suppose in fairness, Phil has presented us with...
Sorry. Break up the buttons.
Phil has presented us with the feedback, or what did he call this? The Dunada rating scale for the bottom of the barrel episodes. And I don't think Horns of Nymon is a bottom of the barrel.
We're having some fun with it. Yeah.
It's not the best. It's not the best.
It's definitely not the best.
No, no.
It's not as good as I remember.
Oh, sad trombone's on here.
Oh.
I'll be darned. All right. Sorry. I'll get away from this. So was when you did it.
This is Sparta!
Oh, no. You said you did Spartacus, didn't you?
I said this is, I'm right. Spartacus. Because you were saying I'm Batman. Yeah, I'm Spartacus, right. You know.
How come I'm Batman's not on here?
Because anyway, there's too many versions to choose from.
If it was, it'd be Michael Keaton.
I'm Batman. Oh.
All right, who wants to start?
There is some good elements to this story. At its core, I think it's the ideas behind it aren't bad.
I agree with that.
And I think they're better realized in the audio adventure.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Well, yeah.
The Doctor is really enjoyable. Him and his relationship with Romana is great. The fact that she builds her own Sonic is fantastic.
The fact that he tries to pocket hers.
Yes.
is fantastic.
Which makes me wonder if hers is better. But then she leaves it behind. And it's like, really? Shouldn't you know better than that?
Well, and it was such an obvious when she gets up and he's like, move! And she huffs and she slams it down on the counter and puts her hands up and then marches off to the door and then is surprised when she doesn't have it on her. It's like, you put it on the counter!
Yeah.
And we get fake canine.
It's not fake canine.
It's not canine.
It's the same voice, and you.
No, it's not the same voice.
No, I'm sorry. It's the same
dog. Same body.
But here.
But it's still not, because it's Mark II. I did fix it. During our tweeting during Friday Night Who, we determined that the first episode of the season, we get the laryngitis bit. And then after that episode, John Leeson's gone. And it's this guy. So. K-9 has laryngitis all this season.
He's still recovering from his laryngitis.
Yes. He's not even recovering. He still has it. He doesn't recover until Leeson comes back. That's how I retconned it. And then I really enjoyed K-9 in this story, despite the fact it's not John Leeson. He had such good lines.
Good use of K-9 in this
and he had good use, good lines. good chemistry.
Remove me from the surface.
Yes. And I wish I could have heard it in John Leeson's voice.
It's one of those things that it almost makes you wonder if, I forget his name, you know.
No, not John.
I don't know because it's John Leeson.
David Burnley. Ah. All right, I'll find it. Hang on. Keep going. That guy. Yeah.
You almost wonder. when you're brought in to do this, like, okay, you're going to play the dog now. Are you automatically thinking to yourself, is this a big enough deal that I need to try and imitate what John Leeson has done previously?
Or should I do my own?
Or do you just do your own thing?
David
Brierley. Thank you. And so, I mean, I imagine that a lot of voice actors have this, you know, oh, you're stepping into the role of so-and-so. You know, oh, I'm playing Batman. Do I even bother attempting to do what Kevin Conroy did and has done so magnificently for so long? Or do you do something else?
I think,
and maybe he just thought, I'm not going to try. Maybe he thought, this is just, you know, I'm going to talk like this and be a mechanical dog, and that way it doesn't compare with Leeson. I don't know.
It'd be one thing if
I feel bad that we're discussing that. But
it'd be one thing if this is Mark II's voice. Mark I got left with Leela. Yes?
Yeah.
Yes.
If this was Mark II's voice from the beginning, I don't think I'd have a problem with it.
Technically, the first instance that we see Mark II is Destiny of the Daleks.
With laryngitis.
Oh, no, it isn't.
No, it's not.
No, it isn't.
No.
It's Key to Time.
Key to Time is
with Matt Cameron. We have all through Key to Time. So,
never mind.
If it were his voice through Key to Time and all through Mark II, it'd be okay. I don't think I'd have as much of an issue with it. But midstream? You don't change horses midstream.
Here's the thing. I think you guys are too... I think Sean's trying to be too apologetic for the voice. I think you're too disgusted by it. I think you guys need to lay off. It's a wonderful performance of Canine. Truthfully, since I had seen Shada just a few weeks ago... And I got used to it. It wasn't so abrupt this time for me, so I didn't have so much of a problem.
It's not John Leeson.
It's not. But it's fine. It's a fine Canine voice. It's not somebody... It's somebody trying their hardest to be Canine and do a good job at it. It's not somebody doing half the other half of that word, job of it, trying to keep this family podcast. But it's not somebody doing a halfway job. It's somebody doing the best that they can with becoming the new voice. And it's not that bad. If you think about it, it's still Canine. It's still written to the character of Canine. It's still done really well. And Canine gets a lot of moments to shine in this one, which you should be proud of
and be able
to overlook the video or the audio, the bad audio.
I can overlook
shame the bad, on you both. No.
I can overlook the bad audio because there are those points
I'm trying to defend him.
There were those points of this of, oh, that's really awesome, but then the back of my mind of was still, oh, I wish that was John Leeson.
It would have been this much more awesome with John Leeson.
It's still,
I would agree with great. That. It would have been this more awesome, but I think you're dwelling way too much on the voice, and I think it's a fine
joke. There are several moments where I tweeted out that I figured Keith would be in tears. Because the first...
I wish I had been here. He might have been.
No, I wasn't, because I kept tweeting in response, nope, it's fake Canine.
Yeah, I have this emotional detachment because it's fake Canine. But the first is when Canine's head gets flipped
turned
around.
Upside down.
When the TARDIS console explodes.
And the doctor tried to get a CPR, which had to be ad-libbed. That totally
I know.
That wasn't somebody who wrote that in the script. That wasn't even Douglas Adams saying, hey, give it CPR. That was Tom Baker going... Okay, I'm going to do this.
And unfortunately, and you can just hear how empty.
Yeah. Because it's so like.
But then, those are some of the bits I like Tom Baker the best.
And he very unceremoniously is like, sorry about this. And wrenches his head back around. You all right? Yep. Okay. And then he gets taken apart. And then. He winds up, what was the other one? There was like three big moments where he's just like, oh, poor Canine.
I only remember two where he gets captured and is put on the table and he's like, take me off this
surface.
Well, the guy winds up putting him back together, which...
Yeah.
Why?
How did that work?
I'm glad he did.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that was just
bizarre. We've established that the crazy-eyed huge collar Jonathan Pryce actor is the only one with any real scientific knowledge on this entire planet.
Soldied.
Yeah.
Which looked familiar to me, but I looked at his history and I didn't.
He looked like Jonathan Pryce.
He does look like Jonathan Pryce. I've always thought that. Well, since the second viewing that I've seen it, I've always thought he looked like Jonathan
Let me rephrase.
Pryce.
He looks like Jonathan Pryce when Jonathan Pryce played the master in Curse of Fatal Death.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, I've always thought that since I learned who Jonathan Pryce was, and even before I saw Curse of Fatal Death.
Because he didn't look like Jonathan Pryce in Jumpin' Jack Flash.
Yeah, no. Well, here's the thing is, I saw this when I was a kid, and I remember absolutely loving this episode when I was a kid. Loved it. And then I saw it later in my adult years and realized why I loved it as a kid, because it's goofy and it's silly. And I didn't appreciate it the second time as much. I thought, this didn't age well with me. It didn't become something that I could look back on. It wasn't until this time that I realized, because everything is done very tongue-in-cheek and over-the-top, that it works for me this time, but it's still not that enjoyable of an episode because of that. That's where I think this episode falls down. Destiny the Daleks played loose and fast with the humor, it still worked for the story. It still kept the weight of the story. I think the problem with this is that the actor, Graham Crowden, who played Soldied, was chewing scenery the entire story.
And he was
pantomime is what it felt like. It was way over the top pantomime. And so that ruined the story for me. But that actually tempered some of the things that I thought Tom Baker was doing a little out of character and a little over the top as well. It was almost maybe perhaps that I wouldn't put it past Douglas Adams to have tweaked the script a little to put some of the funny things in. But I think, quite frankly, the director, Kenny McBain is what is credited here, but I could have swore I saw a different name on the credits, but this has got to be right, because, you know, Wikipedia is always right.
The box says Kenny McBain.
Okay. I think Kenny
it's
McBain,
right,
I think, must have been... I have to give him credit for pushing these guys and letting them get a little silly with this, and I think that that's probably where the blame lies for me, is I think McBain should have backed everyone off, and I don't know what other Doctor Who he's directed. I'm looking here. That's it. As far as I can tell, his directorial credits are Doctor Who, The Horns of Nymon, episodes of Coronation Street, and The Omega Factor, and an episode of Double Vision. Oh, the Omega Factor episode of Double Vision. So, yeah, that was his only Doctor Who, and thankfully that was the only one that he ever did, because I quite frankly think that he didn't rail everybody in, and I think
that's
the problem.
What about
the
author, Anthony Reed?
I think Reed wrote a good story. He wrote a fantastic story. I think if everybody had been pulled back a little bit, I think even Romana, Lala Ward, who I've never felt overacted Romana ever, I thought she was a little over the top. That's why I think it was such an even... I mean, granted, the actor that plays Soldied was way over the top. But I just get the impression that this director just had this vision for it, and it was more pantomime than it was Doctor Who. And I just don't think he had a grasp of what Doctor Who was.
Do you think it might have had a matter that he was handed the script, and he's looking at this and he's like, we've got Minotaurs, we've got Horned Demons are the bad guys, and we've got, I mean, references to the, you know, the second great, whatever it was, Empire, and guys pounding on consoles, walking into rooms, yelling at a room full of children, going, scum!
That's
and then
happened.
Walking back
that
out.
That is certainly probably what happened, but here's the problem, is then he didn't do his research on Doctor Who, because if you had seen Doctor Who, that script would not have looked odd.
No, I agree.
And
he
so
didn't
that's
do his research.
I really think I don't think you can blame Anthony Reed, because it's not like the lines were written to be humorous. They were light moments, but it was almost like they were punched. Just the timing of them was wrong, or they were just punched a little too much, you know. Overdone. That's what I don't like about this. It's too pantomime. It feels too corny throughout most of the episodes.
I personally think that this, to me, going back, I remember kind of the same thing. I remember liking it as a kid. I remember actually being scared by it. The Nyman scared me as a kid. This was one of those episodes that really was kind of like, ah! And it was coming actually hot on the heels of the preceding episode is Nightmare of Eden, which is another one that scared me. This was almost the time that I kind of thought maybe I should stop watching this show because it's starting to get a little too much. And I remember as a kid thinking that anything that the Doctor was doing, I was okay with because he was funny and he was, you know, he was kind of keeping that light touch on things. But when he wasn't on screen, there were some horrible things going on that really frightened me as a kid. So I was going into this looking very forward to it. And then it started, and it's very light and funny, and the Doctor's falling over, and I've got to stop saying what could possibly go wrong. And then he falls over. It's uncanny, which that to me sounds like Douglas Adams wrote that.
Yeah.
That's a very Douglas Adams cadence to that particular type of dialogue.
But it still very much fits for.
Well, it fits for because that's who Douglas Adams wrote for.
Yeah.
It's the type of thing that Douglas went, this is a good fit with this. And so I think in his role as script editor, he probably went in and punched it up. Like maybe they didn't have enough script, which is why we get a good chunk of, you know, what's inside the TARDIS in episode one. Is just because they're really, maybe we needed to stretch that a little bit. There were also a couple of really long recaps.
Yeah, there really were.
So I think maybe that the script just wasn't quite long enough.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about the, yeah, that was, that's another thing that drove me crazy about this, is the fact that we backed so far up when we would start the next episodes.
So I think the script came in short.
Since I didn't watch it this time on Friday Night Who, I actually found myself fast-forwarding through not the opening sequence, but from after the opening sequence ended to the point where the cliffhanger would have been. Yeah.
So I think Douglas Adams probably had a good hand in it and probably punched it up a little bit more than what we've been led on to believe. The problem that I had is that after we get through these funny bits with the Doctor and the wonderful stuff and that completely amazing visual graphic of him extending the shield doors down.
Oh, yeah, which, that was really impressive.
For 79, it was like, wow, man.
Which is slightly, of course, we're viewing this out of order, is the graphic they should have used in Shada. When they're extending that door graphic.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it should have been in Shada.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was a different idea. It's a different idea because in this one, the TARDIS is wedged stationary up against another object, not moving, versus
but that graphic,
in the time vortex trying to board another TARDIS.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
Still.
But that effect should have been similar.
I agree. That's the image that when reading it and he's talking about this bridge across the ship, that's kind of the image that I got.
And
so
this
cool
would
to see it.
This would have been right before. Shada would have followed this.
The season finale.
Yeah.
Because of Shada never getting aired.
But, I mean, we've got all this great stuff at the beginning. The dialogue between him and the co-pilot. He's just kind of ignoring him, despite the fact the guy's got a gun at him.
Well, and he even has a line of, notice how everyone's IQ drops when they pick up a gun? was fantastic.
There's so much. Why don't you give me the gun, and that way I can keep an eye on myself and make sure I don't get anybody. What?
Those are little things, though, that I could see Douglas putting in there.
Yeah.
I was fine with those.
And that's what makes the first part of this so good. And I was sitting here just rollicking. Just, all right, this is what I remember. This is going to be awesome. And I'm not going to be scared when the Nyman shows up. Well, then the Nyman showed up. And I wasn't scared. And then I began to realize the rest of the story is just not very good. I mean, it's an interesting idea that we've got these. I agree with you that the ideas are fantastic. That we've got these Nyman, and they're like locusts, and they move. But, okay, realistically, isn't that a very arduous process to go through to strip a planet of its resources, to send one guy to get in good with the crazy-eyed power that be, and promise him all kinds of stuff and doll out a little bit of technology in order to get sacrifices and minerals so that you can build a transporter that on
the
surface looks huge and it can only beam over two guys at a time. And in order to do it, you have to create two black holes, artificially constructed singularities? Okay, wait, back up a minute. The physics of this don't really match up. Now, I'm willing to forgive it because it's 79 and we don't know a lot about black holes at the time. But I've seen Disney's The Black Hole, which was the same year. And that's not how that worked. It's an artificial one. Okay, I'll allow that too. Okay, it's Doctor Who. I'm going to let it go. We've got to bring over two Nine Men at a time. That's it. And then the Doctor's line where he tries to justify it. Well, then they could help him and they could, you know, they build another machine and do it exponentially. Did you see the size of this last one? I mean, he's got a whole complex with big demon horns on top.
Yeah, but you get the impression that he didn't necessarily build that, that a lot of that was prepared for him.
Right,
yes.
Well, because he's Lord Nyman. But right. Still, I mean, okay, so these two guys are going to go and build something, and then they're going to go and bring two guys over, and then those two guys will invite two more guys.
It's a pyramid scheme.
Yeah. For an invasion tactic, I don't think it's feasible. I'm sorry, I just... I don't think
I didn't have a problem with that.
I also
I never have a problem with a little nitpicking.
Well, that's true. I nitpick and you don't. I was really surprised that Nyman, looking at it as a kid, this is a scary monster. I mean, this is a hulking, beastly, scary thing. Looking at it as an adult,
scrawny with big heads.
Looking at it as an adult, I was like, I was afraid of this.
It's like if I put on a bullhead.
He looks like a college football mascot. There should be cheerleaders with pom-pom shouting, go, Nyman, go!
I could cosplay as a Nyman.
Oh, dude, we should totally do that for Galley. Big platform shoes and some fur. We got
to
this.
Heck with that, I'm going to cosplay as Soli.
Soli.
Well, we could probably make you a collar big enough, but you'd have to sniff a lot of glue to get your eyes to do that. You know, bug out thing. I liked the Doctor running through quarters, sticking stickers on things, and then going back for them and realizing they were. I mean, that was cool. And I didn't catch that as a kid. The Maze of the Minotaur.
Oh yeah,
I totally didn't make that connection.
There's a lot of connections to Theseus and the Minotaur in this. The issue that I have with that is, it's like they borrowed that idea of the confusing labyrinth, but it's not explained well within the context of Doctor Who. It's like we're going to borrow this idea from Greek mythology, it was just a reason to drop it in there so that the Daimons could be Minotaur like, but it doesn't really explain the reasoning behind having to have the maze do that.
That's what it felt like to me as well. That it's like, and that's where I think really the story falls down is couldn't we have gotten a little more on why this is all based and some more about ancient mythology and the Doctor going, well, this is, you know, they must have visited Earth at some point. And we never get any of that. It's just kind of thrown in there and then dropped.
And that's sort of fixed in Seasons of Fear, but
sort of.
Yeah.
Not really.
Unfortunately, it's not Theseus, it's
Mithril.
Mithril.
Mithros.
Mithros. Yeah.
There was so much. It opened on such a high. Episode one is so good for me, I thought. And then it just slides downhill. It's like, what happened here?
I almost blame the Nymons more than anything else for the slide down.
They're bad monsters. I mean, they could have been great, but they're not portrayed well. Really kind of they fall down on the job. And as far as everybody overacting, other than Soldeed, it wasn't until you pointed that out. You're right. Romana had a lot of, you know, when he says, "Oh, that's brilliant. I wish I'd have thought of it." Oh, you will, Doctor. What does that mean?
Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't.
And
even,
why is she so happy
even,
about
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's not even so much the line. It's the delivery was also a bit odd as well. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a very odd little entry, and it was fun to watch. But having watched it, it's like, wow, I don't remember this being.
I don't know if I'd go purchase this one.
Well, I own it. And I wasn't all that fond of it the second time I'd seen it.
If I found it cheap enough,
I can't remember why.
I might pick it up.
It almost seems like I got this in a batch of ones that you got, maybe, or I can't remember that you got for me or something. I can't remember why I have that one.
I also thought it was interesting, and I did tweet this out, that Romana 2 Why does she get a new outfit every serial?
Well, Sarah Jane almost does.
Yeah, Sarah Jane too. I mean,
Compared
to some companions like Nyssa, who is stuck wearing the same outfit, or Adric, or...
But you're also viewing it backwards.
That bad. Well, I think part of that is the character. I mean, Leela clearly is the first one, but she even gets costume changes later on.
Yeah.
Because when she starts visiting Earth, you know, period.
Edwardian.
Yeah, Edwardian Earth, she has to dress the part.
Right.
In the lighthouse, same thing. I think it within the character, I don't know, because you're right. I mean, why couldn't Adric have different clothes?
Totally makes sense.
Eventually, Nyssa did, but not very long after that did she stay on board.
Of course, I personally think it would. I really liked her in the mirrored Doctor outfit with the pink and the long scarf from Destiny of the Daleks. That to me is kind of the quintessential. Even though everybody talks about Romana wearing the schoolgirl outfit in City of Death,
right?
That outfit from Destiny of the Daleks is kind of, in my mind, that's the quintessential Romana 2 outfit.
Sure.
I'd forgotten that she wore the hunting outfit in this one, with the boots and the red jacket.
Like she was going fox hunting.
Yeah, it struck me as odd that it's like, when I think back, there's a lot of companions that wound up wearing the same outfit. I mean, Jamie was stuck in his kilt and his.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. Perry changed a lot. Zoe was in the same thing almost all the time. She did change here and there.
I thought it was interesting. Yeah. Romana gets a lot of costume changes.
There's a documentary in one of these that talks about the costumes that Romana goes through, and it's very interesting. I think it's a challenge for the costumers to say, let's come up with something different, unique to this character, and I think that's what they do. Is each episode of her particular run, they put her in something different, unique, and I think it may have been more of an experimental thing with her and Sarah Jane to just make them different, give them another aspect to their character. Now, Sarah Jane went from the pantsuit reporter type in the Pertwee era to the very different.
Andy Pandy,
yeah, style of clothing. Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of the more I watch Sarah Jane, the more I'm of the opinion that the Andy Pandy is what she runs around in when she's not at work. I totally think that she's gearing up to be the reporter, and she puts the armor on. You know, I'm going to go be the reporter today. But then she gets home, it's like, I'm just going to the store, and it's Andy Pandy time. That's just who she is. But then, I mean, Turlough was stuck in that poor schoolboy outfit for 2.5 years.
It seems
years
like guys rarely ever changed. They rarely ever change clothes.
I mean, now Ian, Man of Action, he got the turtleneck.
Yeah.
You know, he got that Bond turtleneck, that very classic black, you could be a spy anywhere in the world because you're walking into the bar with that turtleneck on. But, yeah, I don't know. So, not so much on Horns of Nyman.
Not so much.
I mean, it's a fine story. And if you look at the If you dig down into it, it's an interesting concept. It's a great story. It's got a lot of issues on the surface, and that's
one of my least favorite fourth Doctor stories I've seen.
Despite the fact that it's got so much canine, and
that it's got good canine, despite the voice,
he just won't get past the voice.
I can't. But it's still one of the lesser. Four I've seen.
Well, let's move on to Seasons of Fear, because I'm very curious to see what you guys thought of this one.
On New Year's Eve, 1930, the Eighth Doctor lets Charlie keep her appointment at the Raffles Hotel in Singapore, but his unease at what he's done by saving her life soon turns into fear. Sebastian Grail, immortal, obsessed, ruthless, has come to the city to meet the Time Lord. To the Doctor, he's a complete stranger, but to Grail, the Doctor is an old enemy. An enemy that many years ago he finally succeeded in killing. And this is his only chance to gloat. The Doctor and Charlie desperately search human history for the secret of Grail's power and immortality. Their quest takes in four different time periods. The Hellfire Club, the Court of Edward the Confessor, and the Time Vortex itself. And when the monsters arrive, the stakes are raised from the life of one Time Lord to the existence of all humanity!
I'm not going to give it the horn.
No bum bum bum.
No bum 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 for it for me.
I give it a little bit of a dun dun dun. I mean, it wasn't bad. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it much better than the last two I've had to listen to. No, that's not true. I didn't like it as much as Genocide Machine, but or not Genocide Machine.
Apocalypse Element.
Apocalypse Element.
Oh no, but, you liked the last two. Were,
oh no, no, I liked the
Apocalypse
I'm
Element.
Well,
and, you're talking about the Fifth Doctor.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's not true. I liked what was the thing? Mutant Phase. I liked Mutant Phase
and Apocalypse Element. You did not like Land of the Dead or...
the one before that. Oh, Phantasmagoria. There we go. Yeah, I had forgot we'd done the Dalek ones.
This was heads and head above...
Nyman heads? They're really tall. I just want to get a scale here.
Minuet and Hell, yeah.
Minuet and Hell,
yeah.
Yeah.
Why? Why you got to keep going? Why is that your benchmark one?
Because that is one of the worst I've... This is one of the ones I dislike the most.
Yeah, you're absolutely wrong.
Screw you and your opinions.
I like this. This one is interesting. First of all, I was glad to be revisiting the Eighth Doctor. We haven't heard from him for a while. We haven't done anything for him in a while. And we're right in line. We have done the Fourth Doctor, or the Fourth Doctor, the Eighth Doctor.
In order
for his main line.
There's a reason for that.
And this is one of the key examples of that reason.
And so I appreciate that. And so I really enjoyed that. What was confusing to me is why he's telling this story at the beginning. Because we haven't had that big finish. And so it's like he's narrating what's going on. You don't get the impression that he's necessarily telling one person. It's like he's telling this story. And
so
that,
then I went and did this.
That threw me off.
It's not until later that you realize he's telling the story
exactly,
to someone.
To somebody. So that threw me off and set me off kilter at first. But, I don't know. I get the impression you didn't like this one. And I don't know what you didn't like about it. Because I think, first of all, I love the idea of being in the future and somebody coming up to you and saying that this is not reality. This isn't what's really happening now. That was very cool concept.
My masters created this reality just so I could tell you this?
Exactly. And so I think that was
how
interesting.
Powerful.
The Doctor then saying, okay, I've got to go back and rewrite time. That's very New Who, which I thought was interesting because this came out in, what, 2001, 2002?
2002.
So, I mean...
It's also very much against... Even though his companion at the moment is contrary to what, but the Eighth Doctor has repeatedly talked about the web of time and we can't do this, and he's very stodgy about we don't change things. This is the way this is played out, and we've gotten touches of it through the ones we've listened to. It comes in very heavily in the Eighth Doctor adventures in the serialized format. But for him to come out and say that, I thought was like, wow, okay. I mean, he's really wound up over this guy. And, I mean, the guy said he killed him. So.
See, you say that. He has always talked about how, he has been, I don't know that he's been that stringent on you don't change it. He's talked about the web of time. He's talked about, he himself has dwelled on the fact that saving Charlie from this, from the R, which is...
The R101.
Yeah, which is
revisited. Which plays heavily in this.
R101. Yeah.
Well, no, in the beginning.
It doesn't. Just at the beginning, it's referenced.
It does, but it's really, really subtle.
Yes.
And it took me actually about 1.5 listens through to make sure that I was catching what I thought was there. And I think maybe that's why I didn't like this story as much. As a standalone story, as a Doctor Who story, I don't think this one works. This one has to be taken in context with the larger story arc of what they're going to be doing with Charlie.
That makes sense
because
I mean,
otherwise it just falls apart. There's not enough story here to really do that.
Well, it's because they go back to the first time he meets, technically the second time the Doctor meets Grail.
Right.
And he's starting this quest. And I love the idea of the fact that each time... He's like a religious figure or it's part of a religious context.
Yes.
So the first time he's going to be doing the sacrifice. Well, ultimately what he's doing is he's contacted the Nymon, which we don't know that it's the Nymon yet, but he's contacted the Nymon and the Nymon have essentially made him set up this machine so that he can bring them through. Well, in the context of where we are, it's ancient Rome and They believe in gods. I think it's like 300 AD or 3-something AD. And they believe in gods. And so it's all in the context of he's serving these gods that are going to come through, this powerful darkness.
Which, and the other people that are part of the ceremony of, they're so, yeah, believe what you want.
That's what was really interesting about this story is you always, when you look at these history pieces where people will delve into the fact that there was, worshiping of many gods or worship, it's always very, they're very...
acceptant.
No, well, what am I looking for? They're always very, what's the word I'm looking for? Fanatical about it. So you have to do this, and the rituals have to be this way, and you have to do this, and the gods demand this, and the gods demand this. And these guys are so, whatever, if you believe in this god, or you want to follow this guy. And that was what was really interesting about this, is the lackadaisical theology of this.
It was refreshing to get not a religious fervor nut.
Yes.
That was so... Because we've seen that in Doctor Who so frequently, where, okay, it's always the religious guy that's going to be the one starting problems in the political arena. And these guys were like, yeah, okay. I mean, I agree with you. Yeah. The first part was really good, I thought. But just like Horns of Nyman, it didn't deliver on what I thought it was setting up.
So I like the idea that we resolve this here, and then we bounce ahead to his future. And now he's...
To try to stop him again.
Yeah, and I love the fact that now he's a priest, or a bishop, I guess
a bishop,
he is. Yeah,
yes.
Now he's a bishop. And for the king, the seated king and queen of England,
Edward,
and, Edward,
who,
and
the doctor has encountered both Chelsea? Him and his wife.
Who was the queen? Chelsea? No.
Edith.
That's who it was.
The fact that he's encountered Edith and Edward
before, which I thought was very clever,
was engaged to Edith.
Yes. And runs out on her.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that Edward and Edith, which I think this must be historically.
Accurate.
Not necessarily accurate, but
theorized upon.
Yeah. at least based in some based in some fact. The fact that they were playing other kings and nations off of each other in just a very carefree way in order to manipulate what they wanted. And that's even reflected in the character of them just even in our little microcosm because she doesn't necessarily throw the doctor in the prison because of the fact that he's knocked out her bishop. It also lies in the fact that
he stood her up at the altar
because he ran off.
And some great dialogue there when Charlie's commenting about, I can't believe they put us in manacles. I thought that only happened in cartoons.
How can this be torturous? And then, of course, he says, well, after you've been here a week with your arms in this position, it's quite, painful.
Oh.
Which, and the doctor and Charlie's relationship, knowing what I've listened to, this is one of the peaks of the two of them. They have such good chemistry throughout the entire thing.
So, I love the idea of the fact that they have the fake necklaces because they, we have not noticed that the metal is going to kill us? When it started burning, we said, hey, there's something up here, and we switched it out. So, I love that fact that you've got two very clever calculating monarchs. That was neat.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then bouncing ahead to the next, which is kind of our third part of our three-part act here, or... Technically, well, and then there's an epilogue.
Four.
Well, there's an epilogue.
Three and an epilogue is more accurate.
Because I think there's a prologue, three acts, and then an epilogue. It really is how this is set up.
Yeah, that is.
So then we go to the next, and then that's where everything kind of culminates. It's at that point we realize that it's actually the Nymon.
The Nymon are the cliffhanger of episode three.
Right. Yeah. That's right. And then it's then that we really get the action in the setting up, and we're introduced to Lucy and her. Father or papa, which really isn't her papa, and I love the fact that again we've got another pair of shysters here that are working their own game, and that's revealed as we go along. I that's what I like. It was elements of this that I absolutely loved and thought was a lot of fun and was written really well. Not to mention, Keith was touching on this a little bit, but the partnership between Charlie and the doctor is fantastic. The chemistry is wonderful here. They feel comfortable with each other now. They're playing off of each other as companions that have been together for a while. And I like that. It's now they feel comfortable together. They basically recognize each other's quirks and they recognize each other's strengths, and I like that a lot.
Well, and Charlie still kind of holds a flame for the Doctor. I mean, he smells of honey and all of that stuff, but at the same time can feel comfortable enough with him that she can ask if the Hellfire Club had orgies.
I think India Fisher's phenomenal as Charlie. I mean, she's been good. The character of Charlie, I've kind of felt, has kind of bounced up and down depending upon. Sometimes they write her almost as a little too, I'm that headstrong, independent, Amelia Earhart kind of woman, you know.
And she's got moments of that.
And she is, but yet sometimes it's a little over the top. She's always portrayed well by India Fisher, and you're right, the chemistry between her and Paul McGann is just phenomenal. They are the two best parts of this story.
And I love the tie-ins back to the first story of her escape, and she thinks that she is the cause of this paradox.
Yeah, yeah. I did like that.
I like that a lot.
She's questioning that, and the Doctor's, of course, trying to reassure
her. Well, and I very much like the fact that we're starting to get some traction on that idea. His actions with the R101 may not have been as simplified as you know, as cut and dried as what even kind of hoped that they would turn out to be.
And he even has the line of, what, I can't save one human?
Yeah.
You know, that's what the thing is, he is completely trying to rationalize and trivialize it, because I think he, on the grand scale, knows he's really screwed something up. Yeah. But he's trying to convince himself that he hasn't.
Yeah. Well, and knowing comes later, re-listening to this.
Not knowing what comes later.
But
I don't know what comes later.
I don't know. I don't know what comes later either.
I do, and I'm viewing this as a second viewing.
Other than what I have done my research on,
I wasn't trying to shut you down. I'm teasing you.
Other than what I've done my research on up to this point, as required for the podcast, I don't know what comes later either, and I don't want to know. I'm enjoying the mystery, but again, that's where I think this particular installment of it just doesn't quite work, because all the rest of them have been, here's a tight little contained adventure with the Eighth Doctor and Charlie. Oh, and you remember that one thing that we kind of left dangling from the one before? Here's another little piece. Yeah. Well, we get several pieces, but I don't think we really get enough of the story. In fact, the story in and of itself, as you pointed out, it's really broke up into three acts.
Yeah.
The first episode, not including the prologue, is a tight little contained story. And then there's another one that's pretty much the same story.
Essentially, yeah.
And then there's another one.
It's the same story over and over. I like Grail's decline. I mean, he's had so long on Earth. He's seen
the progression
people
of the characters
live and die. He's had lives live and die.
That'll happen by the time they encountered him in the second episode.
Yes, so then it was that's realistic.
Well, no, I agree.
This is a great example of why immortality sucks.
Speak for yourself. I still do it in a heartbeat.
There are vampire stories that try to touch on this and don't do as good of a job as this story.
I would agree with Keith. And it's subtly done, but it's done well.
Yeah. Especially in that second. And then by the time he comes to the third, he's so far from where he began. He's barely human.
Yeah, I agree.
And then how they resolve it of his past self killing his future self is fantastic. It is a great exploration of immortality. And oftentimes when I've thought of immortality, this is how I viewed it. That it would be horrible. It would callous you so much you didn't care anymore. There is so much of that in this that I completely agree with.
I think it did. I agree with him. I think it worked in this, and I think it illustrated it really well.
The parts of this story, I mean, this is Paul Cornell, so obviously it's got that elevated status just by name. Oh, Paul Cornell wrote it. Okay, it should be good. I don't think it did. I think the elements of, if we're going to touch on the insanity of immortality, well, don't just touch on it. Let's do it. I mean, is that what the story's about or not? Because it really wasn't. The story was about the Doctor trying to find out how this guy killed him.
Right. But
then we get three separate instances of their meeting up and the Doctor foiling the plan in such a almost comical way that
it's definitely accidental.
It diminished Grail as a villain.
Twice it is, but the third time, you really believe that. That's what I liked about this is the first time it's fixed so easily. The second time, a little more difficult because you know it's because of what's happening, but it's also he's also dispatched relatively easy. So the third time when you're expecting, well, this is just going to be wrapped up real simply, it's not. It's actually very difficult. And there's times where you're thinking that the doctor's not going to get out of this, even though you know he does, because there's a whole other line of audios, and we've got four more doctors after him, or three more doctors after him. But so that's what I liked about it, is the fact that they made the third time much more difficult, not to mention all this time Charlie keeps saying, why aren't we just killing this guy? Why don't you just take this guy out? And the doctor is sticking to his morals.
But then the doctor almost does go through with it.
But he makes the confession of that, though, too.
That's where it got interesting. When the doctor says, that's how we dispatch him in episode two. I hucked him off the tower. And then we get this great bit of dialogue between them, and again, really illustrating the chemistry between the two, when Charlie's asking him, you know, normally I can't get you to shut up, so what is bothering you because you're quiet and it's starting to unnerve me? And he launches into this. I didn't take his immortality into account when I hucked him off the tower. There was a part of me that really wanted to kill him, and I thought, ooh, okay, now we're getting somewhere. Dropped.
No,
we didn't go anywhere with it.
No,
because he's the doctor and he's the hero. But
he
kept
dwelling on it, and she said, "No, but you didn't,
that was the end of that discussion.
And I loved that. I love the fact that Charlie showed how much faith she has in him at that point as well. That she knew he wouldn't.
That was
it.
Great for her because it showed her faith in him. It diminished the character building they were doing with the doctor. Because it was just like, it didn't work.
It didn't because first of all, they placed the fact that he thought about it. So then what happens is in that third part, you're thinking, what is he going to do? He's going to have to kill this guy. There's no other way around this.
Rises above that and
does
it.
Yeah, I know. But that's the beauty of it is you think he's going to have to go there. Just because they placed that idea, they planted that idea that he was toying with the idea that he was going to do it or he felt like he was going to have to do it. And so that's why the beauty of it is the fact that he has to, but it was the doctor realizing that, hey, I can't go into that primal urge that I had before, so I've got to play this differently, and he does. And that's where you're sitting there going, how is he going to dispatch of him? They're going into this duel. We've got to
opportunity for the doctor to sword fight.
I love the fact
I keep ruining shirts.
I love the fact that we go back to ancient times and young Grail dispatches himself. I thought that was a wonderful way to tie this up. So the doctor didn't have to do it, but the doctor fixes the situation by putting us back into that area in order to do it.
I don't know. Maybe I'm being too critical.
Unfortunately, the Nymon are almost second note in this story.
They really are because they're not revealed until much later.
And having listened to this first before watching Horns, it's almost like Nymon is just a weak adversary.
I agree. After listening to this one.
Which is fine. I don't have a problem with that.
This is something that I want to know from you guys, because we kind of spoiled it by setting this up as a Nymon archive, knowing that they're in this story. So then when they're the big reveal of part three, oh, the Nymon are back, it was kind of like, yeah. I mean, come on, let's get to the stuff. And I'm sorry, having just watched Horns of Nymon, the doctor should have picked up on that a lot sooner. We've got a fake black hole out here. We've got
technology.
When he talks about the metal egg, and he says, oh, I should have known this sooner. I should have figured this out sooner.
Now, admittedly,
I'm fine with those things. He says it.
And I've forgotten more than I care to think about. The doctor's in the 900-something at this point, so it's probably getting harder and harder and harder for him to keep tabs on everybody who's crossed swords with him at one point or another.
So I love all the references to the Horns and that carry over two seasons of Fear.
Yes.
It was watching Horns that made me appreciate Horns more, knowing what Seeds of Fear placed, mm-hmm. what they use.
See, I think, again, if we're going to have the Nymon in this, I'd have rather had more about the Nymon. I would have rather had... You've got this opportunity to take a villain and expand on them and make them interesting and kind of fill in some of the gaps with this broad stroke paintbrush and let us see what's going on. And instead, they're relegated to the back burner because it's all about Grail and his quest for immortality.
Yes.
But you don't fix that story either, because all this really boils down to, and I'm sorry to say this, the entire story boils down to a, hey, let's use the fast return switch, and we'll build a paradox loop, and results in the guy killing himself.
I love that. Fact that we get the fast return switch, and while we're on that, I love the fact that Charlie goes, well, at least he marked that, so that's what it is. Because that's one of the things that everybody has the big issue with in Edge of Destruction, is the fact that it says fast return switch on it. And it's very uncharacteristic for a TARDIS console. This completely fixes that. The Doctor wants to make sure everybody knows this is the fast return switch. I love it.
I loved that. I felt cheated that we had to build all of this other stuff up in order to set this nifty little it felt like a wonderful puzzle box.
You're becoming way too critical.
No, I just it felt like a wonderful puzzle box, but you made me go through one of them heavy duty industrial plastic jobs with the twisty ties that they put on new toys to get to this thing. And by the time I got through all of the wrapping, I didn't care what was in the package anymore.
Sean, it was a fun ride.
This is one of my favorite Eighth Doctor stories so far.
Really? Yeah. See, I wouldn't put it up there as one of my favorites, but
it's pretty high up there. It's in my top three at least. and I should mention that
here's the other thing. Let me jump in here real quick before you finish there. The nice thing about this is it really, to me, felt like a story to set up something grander that's coming. And that's all it needed to be. Once it got to that.
That's part of why I enjoyed this so much.
And I kept thinking this whole time as we were doing this, especially from the beginning when he said, my masters have set up this illusion so that I could be here to tell you this. My first thought is, well, this can't be good because we've already created a paradox somewhere.
Yes. Yes.
But the Doctor, the Fifth Doctor, almost did it with Nyssa in Mutant Phase. Technically, he did, but he was able to write that one off. This is a much grander thing, and you feel like this is one of those fixed point in time screw-ups that were mixed up. And so the end of this I like even better based on the fact that it's like it wasn't unlike the Mutant Phase where the Doctor can just kind of shrug it off and say, well, you know, wibbly-wobbly. This time, it has done something, and it's done something more than just him saving Charlie. Now, this instance is another progression
fact that the Nymon were just utilizing it. They weren't the cause of it. They were taking advantage.
That's just it. The Doctor does write it off. He's like, oh, no, we're just fixing what the Nymon had already screwed up.
No, you're right. You're right.
Only
he
to
does.
Find out that this mysterious God voice that's talking at the end about, oh, no, you have no idea that you were actually involved in the cause.
And then Charlie bit at the end.
Right.
But here's what I'm saying, though, is that the story within itself of the Mutant Phase, the Doctor shrugs it off. And the story in itself is fixed. You realize that the paradox is okay. Everything has been fixed.
And the story shrugs it off as well.
The Doctor still shrugs. Yeah, the story shrugs it off as well. The story does not shrug it off this time. No. And that's what I thought was cool about this.
Go ahead and finish your thought.
I'm going to put one more thing about your Nymon comment. Your Nymon thing, talking about them relegated and exploring anymore. If you paid attention to the horns of Nymon, you don't need the Nymon to be anything more than they are.
Yes.
A locust that just comes and takes over the resources of every planet. There's no more depth to the Nymons. That concept was done and built and done in Horns of Nymon, and all it was is a continuation of that concept.
When was the last time you ever heard of two locusts destroying anything?
Well, that's a thing.
That's just it. It's a horde.
Yes.
It's a horde of locusts. That's why they're called that.
But when the locusts come in, they come in waves. And that's why people don't recognize that they have a plague of locusts in
until
it's too late.
They blot out the sky.
No, you're talking about biblical locust waves. I'm talking Western Kansas. That's a biblical myth, or if you want to believe it's real, that's what happens in the plague is them barking out the sky. Locusts do not
It's a slow progression.
It is a slow progression, and it's like you have too many wants. I don't have a problem with that whatsoever.
I don't either.
Besides, if that's going to be the 9 months MMO to come in two at a time and then suddenly be there and be a lot of them, that's
this,
fine.
This continues
with that.
The Again, MMO the entire time.
Yeah, because they stuck with that concept that they were still coming two at a time. Now, they had more eggs coming. They weren't going to send one egg back and forth because clearly the doctor had to block that group that was coming in.
And the entire bit of him blocking the time corridor was fantastic.
No, I thought it was great. Like I said, there are moments of the story that I liked. I liked that part of it. But then the next thing is that I'm going to do something and then open the door and suck everybody out and just... We've established there's a shield on the door. In the episode that you're referencing!
Yeah, but
he turned it off?
Well, sure. I mean, he obviously set up the rules. He's going to make sure he does everything. All right, you're a hater. Go away.
That's just it. I'm not a hater. There are elements of this that I really liked.
You had mentioned before we started recording.
I'm the guy that likes the crappy ones.
The title. You didn't understand the title.
No, I didn't understand it.
Can't we like the same stories? So
I don't know.
It's rare that Glenn and I agree.
Well, you know what's interesting is when you guys agree on one, it's always one that I really don't like. When you guys are in complete and total sync, it's the one that I'm like, I didn't care for it. But then there are ones that Glenn and I like, and you're like, eh.
And then
it was Minuet in Hell.
Keith, I'm sorry. We keep walking over. You're trying to come up with
it. I want to touch on the title. Because
Seasons of Fear.
Seasons of Fear. And Grail says this in the second encounter with the Doctor of, this is why he's become so jaded. Of he's lived for so long and lived through seasons of fear, and that is why they get the title and why he becomes the way he becomes.
He's immortal. What does he have to be afraid of?
Fear of his masters. At that point, he's afraid of his masters still.
I never got the impression he was afraid of them until they showed up and started ridiculing him for letting things not happen the way they were supposed to. Then, yes, it was like, oh, crap, maybe I should go fix that. The whole time in episodes 1 and 2, it was, oh, goody, goody, goody. I mean, he's like Renfield. They're going to come, and there's going to be joy, and, you know, plagues of locusts for everybody. He's all kinds about bringing these guys to Earth. And he's all kinds of bent on the fact that the Doctor keeps hilariously ruining his plan. I mean, he's like a Scooby-Doo villain times 10. He's like not even Scooby-Doo villain.
That
he's like a wacky races villain.
No.
He's like Muttley. He can't even graduate to Dastardly. He's just the guy that stands in the corner going, please. Because he can't get anything together. He's immortal. He's had how many, you know, he's older than the Doctor, which was a wonderful, cool.
And that's the thing, is being... The immortality jades him so much. And that's what I really like about his character.
Which is what he wanted.
I don't think he realized what it meant.
And then he realizes what it meant. And he starts to go wonky.
He never entirely got immortality.
No.
It was never granted.
He got extensions.
Yeah. But he got these extensions where he was able to keep going. But yet that's still the goal. Despite how miserable it made him. And these seasons of fear... I still want to be immortal so that I can do...
Well,
this hasn't worked out for you so far.
He wants to be immortal, and then he wants to leave Earth. By the later, I get the impression that... And I think he says something along the lines
But at some point, he's also trying to live long enough to see the Doctor's death. Because he does say...
Well, the amount of hatred he builds for the Doctor is fascinating.
And I think that's another thing that's driving him, and I think that's another thing that's clearly driving him.
I just didn't get it.
Small housekeeping things. I think it's cool that the Doctor says, he must be confused. I'm not the one who says, you must obey me. I don't meddle, and I'm not a glamorous woman at the moment. Which is nice references to the Master, the Monk, and Ronnie.
Yeah.
I thought that was
very cool.
I liked that.
And having been one of the few instances where I have the foresight that you guys don't, the Zagreus nursery rhyme comes in later. which is a nice little hint to what's to come.
Well, let me ask you, because they, one of the nursery rhymes in here sounded very, very similar to the nursery rhyme in Shada, in the novelization of Shada. And I thought that was almost a Gallifreyan nursery rhyme when they were talking about
it. It is a Gallifreyan nursery rhyme.
I think it's the same nursery rhyme that was used in the novelization for Shada. Now, I may be wrong,
but I swear it's
when they're talking about the many villains.
Zagreus sits inside your head.
That's it.
Zagreus lives among the dead. Zagreus sees you in your bed and eats you when you're sleeping.
I swear that's one of the ones.
That's what we hear in this story.
I swear that is one of the ones that is recounted in Shada when they're talking about all of the different baddies from Gallifrey and Romana. In fact, I think it's Romana that recounts the... it's towards the beginning.
It's when they're going through books, right?
Yes, I believe that's it.
According to TARDIS Wikia, Shada's not mentioned.
Okay. But Shada may be new enough that they haven't updated it yet, too.
That's true.
It sounded strikingly familiar to something that
Gareth
I heard
Roberts
in Shada.
May have gone back and reached to this, which, if so, that's really awesome.
Yeah.
But it's a nice setup to what's to come for the Eighth Doctor.
And let's talk about the Dalek, because that's also going to be something that's going to be...
The Dalek reference, which is
Did you catch that, Sean?
I did
the
catch
metal
that.
Beast that they were attacking.
And you screamed
out of... It was out of place.
It was horribly out of place.
Yeah.
And it's not explained.
Right.
Now, again, because I've done research up to this point...
You know that it comes along later.
I know that it's going to be fixed later.
Yeah.
So all of my vehement hatred that you seem to think I have for this episode, I'm willing to temper it because, as I said, it feels like the linchpin in the middle of a much bigger story
and
arc.
See, that's
and
just
I'm
it.
Hoping
that's one of the things
those
I think
later
of this.
Stories will fix this for
I
me.
I will agree with you that this can't be a standalone story. I would just, totally agree with you. But based on the fact that this is a monthly line of audios, I don't think they really intend for very many people to go into these bouncing around, which fortunately
that's
we
true.
Haven't done with the Eighth Doctor.
At least with eight,
right.
Yes.
Now,
well, I do just enough research to try and keep this.
That's good.
Until I told you.
Yeah, that's true, too.
That's what excited me more about this when I was listening to it was the fact that I really felt that we were setting up. All along, it's like you said, we've had small mentions of him taking and saving Charlie. We've had this real thin overarching within the stories. And now I'm finally getting that payoff of, oh, they're setting us up for something. And I think maybe that's what's added to my enjoyment of this is I'm going, okay, this is going to become a much grander thing. And just reading through and him talking about the Zagreus nursery rhyme, the Dalek being mentioned and knowing that it's going to be part of something later. I love that. I absolutely think that's fantastic. I do want to point out here that coming from the Big Finish Companion, Volume 1, written by Richard Dimmick, it does say that the opening of this play has an opening voiceover, which is an homage to the Doctor Who TV movie. I thought we could get through a large chunk of setup more quickly via the voiceover, Paul says. I didn't feel I had to avoid doing that because the form had already set it up.
That's true.
I didn't.
Which
know.
And that voiceover sets up later too.
Yeah.
It ties in later. First listening, I found it unsettling, but then once it tied in, I was okay with it.
Well, yeah. Once you get to the end and they kind of reveal why he's narrating this a little bit, which, again, the why is still I didn't think terribly Ooh. Clear. Even listening to it a second time on my one and a half go throughs, there was like. Okay, I understand that he's talking to somebody, but it's still
it's not entirely clear until later.
It's not it's not clear exactly what is happening. And again, I hope this is going to be fixed later, so that all of a sudden I can go back and go, "Oh, Seasons of Fear suddenly makes sense," because it doesn't
honestly,
right now.
I think it will.
Now, one of the things that I thought was interesting is, and I happen to notice that this is mentioned on Wiki, which is what triggered it in my brain because I heard it at the time, and it bothered me that both the Doctor and Charlie. Reference Benjamin Franklin being a president of the United States, which he does not.
No,
now,
right.
I've had this argument with people in school that he was. Yeah. And I want to uncategorically state Benjamin Franklin
was not
never
while a genius and a great
and a wonderful
man,
statesman
and a wonderful statesman and postmaster general and an ambassador to France at one point.
An inventor.
Was never president of the United States. Ever. Period. The end.
Yes, he is on our U.S. currency. He still was never a president.
He was never a president.
He's the only non-president on our U.S. currency.
I had to back that up and listen to it again to make sure I heard that because I thought, wow, that is a very blatant mistake right there.
Yes. Well, now, and that's what and it,
that was my
I
one
wondered
complaint
at the time is this, you know, because as we've pointed out, that we're not experts in English royalty, monarchy history. And we quite often make mistakes on that. And I wondered, well, is this an instance of the guys at Big Finish not necessarily knowing American history to that point of making that mistake? Or is this an example of time contamination, as Wiki suggests, that maybe this is a purposely planted mistake and that this is how bad whatever is coming has created
this fracture.
Well,
that's a good way to
fracture.
Say, oh, we made a mistake, but let's pretend we didn't make it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's true. We don't know. It could go either way.
I believe that more.
I mean, I would like to believe that they do their research over there, especially Paul Cornell. I would like to believe that he does his research over there. I should tweet him and ask. So we just listened to Seasons of Fear. Was this on purpose or not? But, you know, so, you know, I'm hoping that's one of those little nuggets.
Spoiled something for me.
Damn.
What are you reading your book for?
What? Yes.
They're having whispered conversations back and forth now.
Oh, sorry, I'm much more excited now. I don't want to spoil it for you because I've already spoiled it for me, but now I want to qualify that something in there is okay.
So, like, I think this is one of those many, many nuggets that were dropped in here to kind of illustrate that we're going to get some traction
Sean,
on what's going
this
on.
This is
going
to become so much better, trust me.
Okay. Yes.
I've listened to it.
Trust me, it's going to make this better.
Well, like I said, it's an Eighth Doctor adventure.
You even warned us at one point. Yeah.
They had me at
it
a low.
Starts to blur.
Paul McGann has the opening line, and I'm like, I'm with it. I'm here. I'm happy. It's just not my favorite so far. So.
Anyway, at the end of this thing, we've got something that is taking the form of Charlie.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's some more based on the paradox.
The big
that's
thing
cool.
That's
what's cool.
Comes in later.
That's what's cool.
Shopping.
So I do want to point one more thing out of that I was reading in here, which I get after you guys for doing this. But, Paul Cornell.
Quit reading on the internet.
No, Paul Cornell. This is actually from the Big Finish Companion as well.
Richard
Paul
Dinnick.
Cornell was not happy with the original draft. At the end, modern Grail killed ancient Grail, as opposed to the other way around, before ancient Grail had gained the power from his masters, he explained, which led to the time paradoxes and multiple copies of the Doctor and Charlie. And then he says,
I
it was
like
horrible.
Much.
Yeah. That's what he says. It was horrible.
That doesn't make sense.
So anyway, there's I'm so excited now. I can't believe they would put that down there, though, because it's
that's
not,
a huge spoiler.
Yeah, it's not it's, yeah, that's not clear in the audio.
No. I guess they assume anybody who'd pick up the Big Finish Companion would have listened to it all the way through.
Well, shame on them. That's all right. That was a good spoiler.
Because I didn't know that coming in later. Listening to it without the spoilers.
Right.
It's, yeah.
Cool. All right. You're still looking for that nursery rhyme.
I don't think Zagreus was mentioned in Shada.
So Zagreus was not one of the...
That's something I would have keyed in on because I know who Zagreus is.
Oh, okay.
Having listened to the Eighth Doctor stories, I know about Zagreus, and I would have keyed in on that on Shada.
I'm not seeing it in here.
They do reference that one of the other ones, or several of them,
Zagreus was a character in Gallifreyan nursery rhyme and a boogeyman to the Time Lords. I swear that's in Shada.
It's not in Shada, though.
I swear that's in Shada.
I'm telling you.
You went to TARDIS index file?
Yes, that's where I was. The TARDIS Wikia.
There's the
and I would have pointed out...
Oh, there's a story called The Legend of Zagreus. Okay.
Yes.
I don't see anything about...
And a story called Just Zagreus, which we come up on later.
Gotcha.
Which is where the character is fully explored.
At any rate, as with most of the Paul McGann Big Finish, I'm excited to see what comes next.
Yes.
I will say that. I mean, it's definitely whet my appetite.
What are you doing? For,
if you want to keep looking, this is where the writing goes.
That's
I didn't see it. But
I'm convinced.
I can't remember where it is in there.
I just swear I heard that. There's a similar nursery rhymes horror story to it. Because the main guy in Shada that he's going to release is one of the feared ones, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's what you're confusing with.
Well, no, because there's a whole list of them. And they go over them. And they talk about
them. Well, that's what I just turned
to. One is the witch. One is the...
Oh, well, maybe I'm not in the same part. They mentioned the oath. I swear to protect the ancient law of Gallifrey, blah, blah, blah.
But I
thought it was that he read a segment of the nursery rhyme book to her. And I know that he does in the video, but I don't know if it was in the book or not.
I don't think it was Agrius' nursery rhyme.
It may not have been.
Because I sure didn't key into it, and I'm fully aware of Zagreus and what comes.
Okay.
Because I, for once, have foresight, foreknowledge that you guys don't.
Yeah, it's interesting for Keith to be ahead of us and knowledge of something that we don't
rare.
Know.
It's weird, isn't it?
And as soon as we catch up with Eighth Doctor, it will never happen again.
Feeling out of touch with the natural.
What's next on the schedule, Sean?
Well, next on the schedule. uncharted territory for me, because I've not seen this. Next week for Friday Night Who, we get Time Flight with Peter Davison, the Fifth Doctor. And
another Peter Davison.
That one I did on purpose. I wanted to do two Peter Davisons.
They both have elements.
The Big Finish mainline number 10, Winter for the Adept.
I have heard.
Which features Peter Davison and Nyssa, and actually does fall in line next in the Peter Davison-Nyssa adventures.
Nice.
So I'm trying to keep... We did skip over one, but it was the Fifth Doctor and Perry, so I didn't feel too bad. This is next in line as far as that continuing
goes. That would boggle my mind.
Which I've read that as well. So.
You've read it.
Or listened to that as well, sorry.
I'm going to spoil it. I didn't like this one either, but I'll
wait until this next one. This one's better than Phantasmagoria and Land of the Dead. In fact, there's a mention of something in Land of the Dead on here.
Is this better than Mutant Phase or not as good?
No,
not as good as Mutant Phase.
But okay. we'll get to that. I don't know, because I was feeling silly and I thought, well, we should do the two time ones relatively close to each other. The following week, we do Time Lash with Colin Baker. And then we get a Colin Baker audio adventure to pair up with it on our next show, Whispers of Terror, which is number 3 in the main line. So.
I think that works.
And then...
Nothing beyond that point is canonical.
Then I'll be on holiday.
We have one more.
Oh, we do.
For Friday Night Who on the 17th. The night before the big day.
Yes.
For Keith's wedding, we're going to do Keith's favorite episode, which is Vincent and the Doctor. So we get some 11th Doctor action.
Yay!
And then Glenn and I will...
A bit of serendipity. Sean just got back from the big portrait of the sunflowers.
The big sunflowers. And then Glenn and I will be flying solo while you're on holiday, and we've decided to do book reviews that week.
We are doing book reviews.
And you'll be doing the Eight Doctors,
written by Terrence Dix.
And I will be doing A Morality Tale, written by David Bishop, featuring the Third Doctor.
Which I'm going to try to get read before then as well. So.
Hopefully so will I.
Have you stalled? You haven't started.
I've started.
He's started. You're like halfway through.
I'm over halfway through now, but it's slow going.
Yeah. Okay.
It's frustrating. But you'll get all of my thoughts then. So I don't know. Maybe I'm being too nitpicky about things. When did that happen? When did I become old and stodgy and set in my ways? I'm the biggest champion of junk.
You have mentioned several times of the old stodginess in you of the violence for some of the Doctor Who episodes.
I don't know. I mean, you know my taste in movies.
I know.
Flash Gordon, that's the greatest film ever. But I didn't like Horns and Nyman.
Well, none of us... Like Lawrence and Nymon.
Yeah.
It's just Seasons of Fear, two of us.
I think I had more issues with it than some. But. All right.
Maybe it's just because Paul McGann is always so enthralling and entertaining that I expected better.
better. Yeah. He's had worse.
All right, I can't find it, so we're going to end the show.
I found more moments in that one that were enjoyable and more moments that were horrible than I found overall in the Seasons of Fear. Does that make sense?
Finding more moments of horrible does not make a better story, despite the good moments.
It is true.
Wrong shelf.
All right. All right, guys, that is going to do it for us this week. Until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
I'm Batman. I did that in the wrong order, didn't I? I should have done that when we were introducing ourselves instead of in the sign-off part of it.
No, you should have said that instead of I'm Sean.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing. My brain comes up with these great ideas, but they're usually about 30 seconds behind where I needed to do it. Good night, everybody.
Be seeing you.
Do you want to do it over so you can get the gag in?
Yeah.
All right.
It's better him getting it wrong.
It's more true to life.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.